As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Chilly Friday. Good morning. Welcome to FM 100.3 KFAM and the Friday Football Feast. PA in charge. Nordo is the producer. It is a Friday Football Florio Feast as we begin today's radio show with Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Mike, I'm going to speak for you here and just cut me off if I'm completely wrong, okay?
Okay.
Mike Florio does not completely believe in Kirk Cousins. Paul Charchian champions the cause of Kirk Cousins. Mike kind of misses Case Keenum. Paul Charchian does not miss Case Keenum. Mike, your ProFootballTalk.com post wondering if the Vikings can trade Kirk Cousins was splashy with potentially the intent of re-engaging with Case Keenum. Good morning, and carry us through it.
Now, Paul, are you actually in the studio today, or are you calling from the road on the way in because you're late again?
I always love that one.
It's not 9:25 to noon today, okay, man? I'm in studio, and I'm with a Florio Friday football feast.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I really like what Case Keenum did in 2017, and I think Case Keenum is better suited to a team that doesn't have a great offensive line. I think a pocket passer with limited mobility like Kirk Cousins is not the ideal solution for an offensive line that is going to have guys busting through and forcing the quarterback out of the pocket. Because with Kirk Cousins, when he's forced out of the pocket, one of two things happen. Either he rolls to the right, throws the ball away just before he gets out of bounds, or he gets tackled while he's trying to roll to the right and throw the ball out of bounds. Keenum did great things in 2017, escaping the pocket, moving laterally, resetting, looking down the field, moving again if he needed to, resetting, finding someone wide open. And I think that he's better suited to the current state of the Vikings offense than Kirk Cousins is. And we saw last year the Kirk Cousins experiment. We saw the losses in prime time. It's become not a narrative, but a fact. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. In those big spots, he just can't get it done. And if we know it, I think the team knows it. I think the players know it. And I think it makes it even harder. He should want to have a big primetime game early that he does everything he can to win to try to turn this narrative slash reality around. And I look at the money that was spent. I look at what was obtained in year one, dollar for dollar. I'd rather have Keenum at 18 than Cousins at 28. Now, I know it's impractical to trade him. I know he's got a no-trade clause. I know that no one's going to want that $58 million over 2 years. I mean, just the fact that it's $58 million over 2 years and then no one would want it invites fair question as to whether or not the Vikings should want it, not that they can do anything about it because it's fully guaranteed.
Yeah, but Keenum's not the answer. That's where, you know, you can. I think these are two separate topics, Mike. One is you can evaluate Kirk on his own merits, and I think a lot of what you said is fair. To suggest that Case Keenum is...
I'm not saying he's the best, but if it's one or the other, I'll take Keenum at 18 over Cousins at 28 based upon what the offensive line currently is. That's my point.
Yeah,
maybe there's somebody out there better than Case, but I think Case, dollar for dollar, is better than Kirk.
Here's where I disagree. There is a team out there right now that could pay him $18 million, the Denver Broncos, and they don't want to. And you know, they would rather have a washed-up has-been Joe Flacco, who's fractionally as good as Kirk Cousins, over Case Keenum. Case Keenum's going to enter this next season on his fourth team in 4 years, in all probability, unless the Broncos reverse and decide to keep him, because every team that sees him, knows him, watches every throw in practice, breaks down all of the tape of every throw in a game, they don't want to keep him. And that would have been the Vikings, too. We'd be entering this draft right now talking about not only the Vikings have to solve their offensive line. If they'd have kept Case Keenum, they'd be trying to find a quarterback just like the Broncos were.
Yeah. Yeah. All I know is that, and there's a variety of reasons for this. I think the organization did not do a good job last year of reeling in expectations. But whatever the expectations reasonably could have been for year one with Kirk Cousins, fair to make it to the playoffs equals not making it up to the expectations. And I looked at the schedule. There were 8 big games last year. He was 2-6 in those 8 big games. And that's not good enough. And it doesn't justify the $28 million per year investment.
Mike, maybe the correct play, given last year they ended with 2 offensive coordinators, is to have a full offseason with Stefanski and Kubiak, draft offensive line, make the offensive line better. And I think it is fair to properly judge Kirk Cousins potentially more harshly this year than off last year.
Well, but I still think that great quarterbacks make things happen. Just like in the Super Bowl, Jared Goff, championship players make championship throws and championship moments, and he didn't. And sometimes that's just who you are. There are categories when it comes to the overall quality of a player, and there may be a ceiling over Kirk Cousins that he's never going to bust through. And we knew that ceiling was there based on his time with Washington, but people got caught up in the fact that he's available. When has there ever been a franchise quarterback, potentially, on the right side of 30 who is healthy, who hits the open market? It's never happened before. And that's why he got $28 million per year over 3 years. And, you know, frankly, we haven't talked about Nick Foles yet, but I think Foles is going to have a hard time finding a taker because of what happened with Cousins last year and because of what happened with all the rookie quarterbacks last year. Who's going to pay somebody a bunch of money to come in and play quarterback when 5 out of 5 guys taken in round one last year have worked out so far? And that makes it even harder if the Vikings even would be interested in finding a taker for Kirk Cousins. And if Cousins would be willing to waive his no trade clause, it makes it even harder to find someone that would take on that obligation when this push is in place to go young at quarterback.
I don't know if I agree with that on Foles, because I think there are teams that are in a win now mode, like, you know, the Jaguars that have defense that is Super Bowl caliber.
Okay, other than the Jaguars, name 3 teams that you think would pursue Nick Foles, because I went through this exercise earlier today.
I will.
I had to my producer, and I was stunned at the limited number of teams that would realistically want Foles.
All right, well, let's go from Jacksonville, which I think the most obvious one. Let's go to Miami. Ryan Tannehill not expected to be with the team. They've got cap room, and, you know, presumably they want to have some kind of an upgrade at the quarterback position, and they don't have a draft position that's going to put them in a spot where they can easily get help.
Well, but aren't they going to be more inclined to try to get a young guy? They've got Sam Darnold in the Jets. They've got Josh Allen in Buffalo. There's a lot of steam about Kyler Murray in Miami. See, that's the problem. For any of these teams that may want Nick Foles, you look at Kyler Murray and say, cheaper, younger, maybe a franchise quarterback. We don't quite know what Foles is. I mean, maybe it was a slumdog millionaire type of a situation for him in the 2017 postseason where everything fell together perfectly at the right time. He was awful with the Rams in 2015. I don't know. And here's the other thing, too, about Foles. You mentioned how the Broncos chose Flacco over Keenum.
Yeah.
They also chose Flacco over Foles.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe, yes. I mean, but getting Foles is going to be a lot more expensive than the fourth rounder in all probability.
Well, and that's another argument in favor of not taking Foles. If he's looking at $25 million plus per year, aren't you better off with a contract that's going to be $25 million complete and total over 4 years?
Jeez.
I think you're better off taking your chance with the young guy.
Yeah.
Florio.
You were chatting with Rodney Harrison on your radio show this morning, and you asked him, obviously he's won titles with Tom Brady, speaking of championship quarterbacks. I believe your question paraphrasing was to Rodney, is Tom Brady showing signs of decline? And Rodney answered it, but what's your opinion on that? Do you see signs in Brady that definitely show signs of declining?
Well, I think what's going on is that the Patriots understand the limitations of a 41 going on 42-year-old quarterback, so they are coloring in the lines that they currently have. And when you see the Patriots run the ball on 3rd and 8 like they did against the LA Rams in the Super Bowl, because they don't want Tom Brady taking a 5-step drop and being a sitting duck for Aaron Donald, they understand that they have a quarterback who, while he can still do certain things great, there are certain things that you don't want to ask him to do. And look, there's a sliding scale between maximum physical ability and maximum mental ability. And Tom Brady is at the point where there is nothing that you can show him before a snap or during a play that he hasn't seen before. So as long as his brain can send the messages to his body and his body can reasonably respond to what his brain wants it to do, he's a valuable asset. He's a coach on the field. Chris Sims told me a couple of weeks ago when his dad retired at age 38, it may have been actually Peter King that pointed this out. Phil Sims said, you know, it's a shame that I can't physically play now because I finally figured it all out.
Yeah.
So Brady's got it all figured out and can still do enough to deliver the football to whoever's open. I mean, look at all those times Julian Edelman was wide open, and people saying, oh, Julian Edelman's the Hall of Famer. Look how he's gotten open.
Yeah.
I think that Tom Brady knew he was going to be wide open because he knew what the defensive players were going to do before the defensive players did.
Charchi?
Back to Denver for just a second, and John Elway. He's getting a lot of criticism, Elway is, for his quarterback acumen, and as a former Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, expectations were high. But if you look at the track record, Brock Osweiler, Trevor Siemian, traded up for Paxton Lynch. Then he tried Case Keenum. 1 year into that, he's kicking Case Keenum to the curb. Now he's trying to get some final plays out of Joe Flacco's career. Do you think? Do you sense what I'm seeing, at least on social media, that John Elway's acumen, at least as a quarterback evaluator, is dicey?
Well, I think about this. The only quarterback that he obtained that worked out was the guy that everyone wanted. They were lined up out the door to get Peyton Manning. And he's tried every other way. He's tried a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a seventh-round pick. He's tried the signing a free agent. Now he's going to try trading for a veteran. And I think that, and this may be one of the reasons why Tony Dungy says that, Peyton Manning will never be a coach, because Peyton Manning will be too frustrated by his quarterbacks because they're never going to be as good as him, right? So I think Elway looks at these guys and says, basically, there I am. That reminds me of me. And then they go out and they play, and it's like, oh, that guy doesn't play like I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. You can't find another John Elway. And I think Elway is desperate to find, a 23-year-old version of himself.
Michael, did you enjoy the Alliance of American Football?
Well, I don't know that enjoy is the right word. I was curious. I was intrigued. I like some of the things they're doing that could trickle over to the NFL. The idea of no kickoffs, the 4th and 12 play from the 28 that would replace the onside kick. I like their overtime concept, although I don't like one shot only per team because there's going to be a lot of ties.
Agreed.
On a percentage basis, there's only 40 regular season games. How many games are we even going to get to overtime? I don't know. They need star players. They need people to plan their weekends around watching or attending the same way that people plan their NFL weekends around watching or attending. And here's the other thing, too. I was doing some of the math earlier today about what they pay these guys. It's $80,000 a year across the board, right? Regardless of who you are, you're getting $80,000 a year. Now that they're playing games, that's a big nut to come up with every week. And I don't want to be gloom and doom, right? Boom and gloom, whatever you want to call me, Paul, both Pauls. But we're not at the point where the rubber's meeting the road. And we'll see what kind of money they have behind this league if they start making payroll every week when you've got, so few people attending the Arizona game last week that they didn't even announce the official attendance.
By the time I call you next Tuesday, if you have time, do you think Bengals head coach Zach Taylor will actually have a defensive coordinator?
Well, Marvin Lewis is available.
Yeah, and according to you, months ago, Mike Zimmer was going to be available.
Well, what do you mean? All I know is look, you want to start this?
No, I don't. I don't have time.
Are you playing the music for me to leave? Are you playing the music to get me to shut up? Like the Oscars?
No, it's romantic, smooth jazz to get you all set for a fun weekend in the barn.
Yeah, okay. No, I don't know what they're going to do in Cincinnati, but it's a fairly important gig when you consider the head coach is an offensive guy.
You're my man. Thanks for the time. Have a good weekend.
See you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports Radio, part of the TimberTech set list. What's on deck? According to TimberTech, constructing the 9 to noon set list at TimberTech.com. That was Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Around the corner in truncated fashion and out of nowhere in the middle of February, Paul Charchian wants to go down the road of Adam Thielen getting a raise and getting it right now. The Friday Five is full of National Football League stories. That's in the mix at 9:35. Bruce Boudreau, coach of the Wild, guaranteed his team would make the playoffs at about this time yesterday. Later in the afternoon, Russo Radio dropped a story indicating the owner of the Wild has told the general manager, move whomever you want, even if we don't make the playoffs. Something's incredibly fishy. We hit that at 9:55. We have a video games bit at 10:15 we think you'll really enjoy. And Chad Greenway is in studio at 10:55. PA in charge, feasting on a Friday. Nordo is the producer. Radio station FM 100.3 KFAN. Studios, Brian Heating and Cooling Studios. Keyword time, here's Nordo.
Put a grand in your hand. It's a national cash contest. You can be Derek in Apple Valley, Bob in Blaine, Ben in Andover, all the rubes that listen to The Fan every hour. New keyword, new chance to put $1,000 in your pocket. This hour's keyword is run. Text the keyword run to 200-200. That's run to 200-200. Chance to put a grand in your hand. Text and data rates do apply.
Football Feast.
PA in charge.
It's PA in charge on The Fan.
Free Movie Friday, and Adam Tickets, the best app to book your movie tickets, wants to hook you up with tickets to see Isn't It Romantic, now in theaters. It's a hilarious new comedy starring Rebel Wilson, Liam Hemsworth, and Adam Devine. Text LOW to Adam1, L-O-W, to A-T-O-M-1 for your chance to win. Standard data and text message rates do apply.
I feel like the world is turning.
Charchi?
Yes, sir.
The long play for Joe Imholt, Vice President of Visitor Experience at the Science Museum in St. Paul, specifically something beginning today. That's called Game Changers.
Game Changers is a video game exhibit spanning 10,000 square feet inside the Science Museum.
Yeah.
It is got over 100 different playable games going all the way back to the beginning. Pong forward.
Hold on.
And
geek cred.
Oh, God, yes. Classic games and all kinds of information about the games, how they affected the world,
yeah,
and the designers, the people behind these games. Mm-hmm. The teams that made these games and all kinds of information. It's a little bit like having the Video Game Hall of Fame,
yeah,
come to your town. This is a traveling exhibit. It is here for some period of time. I don't know how long.
Until May, I believe.
Until May. Thank you. And it opens today. Today is day number one of Game Changers,
okay,
at the Science Museum. And we will talk to Joe about that.
That's one way to change the game.
Geek cred.
I had, Sam Farmer, super well respected LA Times NFL writer.
Correct.
The week up to the Super Bowl. Yeah. And one of the topics broached with said scribe was, can't remember the member of the Rams, but it's a member of the Rams who has purchased a competitive video game team, and they compete.
Yes.
And the long play with the LA Times story was, last year, or 2017, competitive video games and like that whole gaming aura.
Massive.
It generated more money than the National Football League.
It probably did.
No, it did.
In totality.
What, in totality.
Yep. And you know, the e-games, the e-sports is segmented by, actually a lot of ways. It's segmented by game. Like League of Legends has its own. Overwatch has its own. There's like, so they're, it's all segmented that way. Yep. But if you roll it all up together, Paul, it's absolutely massive. And that is why you see a lot of the traditional ball sport owners investing in esports teams because they want to diversify their portfolio. And if the day is going to come that traditional ball sports are going to get passed by esports, they want to have a position in that. Now the Minnesota Timberwolves have got a fourth team. They've got the Timberwolves. They've got the Lynx. They have their G League team and the Timberwolves own their NBA 2K team, Wolves Gaming.
Really?
So they've got, you know, there is a 2K basketball professional team attached to the Wolves that's going to launch this coming summer.
Holy cow.
So yeah, it's become absolutely massive.
Paul Charchian weekly sends a Tolstoy-like novel of potential topics for the Friday Football Feast. And kind of buried in strange fashion, given here we are, day after Valentine's Day, middle of February, free agency is a month away, we go to the combine in 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. Paul Charchian wants to chat about this guy.
Cousins takes a snap. Green Bay rushes four. Cousins passes. Thielen! He caught it! Is he in? Touchdown! Yes! What an amazing pass by Kirk Cousins! Threading the needle. Thielen closes on it. 22-yard touchdown. And we're a two-point conversion from tying the game.
Well, at Paul Charchian via Twitter, what do you have up your tattered sleeve involving young Adam Thielen?
We've talked a lot about the offseason needs for the Minnesota Vikings in terms of guys they need to save, who re-sign, the guys that they may cut. Nobody's talking about Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen.
I don't want to cut Adam Thielen.
I don't want to cut Adam. We're not going to cut him. But Adam Thielen may be feeling like he is outperforming his current deal.
Okay.
Last year, he was paid approximately, his base salary was $3.8 million.
Well, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Now, he also got, if you work in his prorated signing bonus and everything else, blah, 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 it was more like a $5 million year for him.
Okay.
Next season, that jumps up, though. He'll make an extra $2 million next season.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. He's going to make, is just his base salary is $5.8 million.
And 2019 is not final year of deal, correct?
No, he's under contract year after that as well.
Okay.
But there could be a scenario here where Adam Thielen feels like he has outperformed his contract sufficiently enough that he should get a new deal.
The first eight games of the 2018 season, young Adam, Detroit Lakes Adam Thielen, had yardage totals that went 102, 131, 105, 135, 116, 123, 110, 103.
He was on pace at the halfway point of the season. He was on pace to have the most catches and I think the second most yards in any single season.
Now, the proverbial fly in the ointment, the final eight games of the season, the yardage totals were 22, 66, 125 versus toothless Green Bay, 28, 70, 19, 80, 38.
Oh, my God.
How do you read into that?
So after topping 100 yards through each of the first eight games, he did it one time the rest of the way.
Right.
There are people that suggest that that teams figured him out, that they figured out how to neutralize the routes that he runs.
Three of his nine touchdowns, final eight games of the stanza.
Yeah, you'd like to have more scoring as well, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then there were a number of games when Diggs was either not healthy or didn't play.
Yeah.
And those games didn't go well for him. The Detroit game especially comes immediately to mind when the whole passing offense kind of needed to go through Adam Thielen and he couldn't do it. And maybe that's not even a fair way to frame it up, because who else was on the field with him, right? And you know, the Detroit game, he's starting in the slot. We have Laquan starting out wide on one side, and we've got, I don't know, Aldrick Robinson starting out wide on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, defenses are going to take Adam Thielen away. But great, you know, great receivers overcome that stuff, right? Antonio Brown's been double-teamed for 5 years, and he continues to have, you know, great success. So I think there's still another step. There's another step to his game that I think he can get to from a performance standpoint. But
right.
That doesn't mean that he won't try to get more money out of a team that doesn't have a lot more money to give.
Right.
I think a lot of listeners would say, hey, the Vikings paid you before you were really good. The Vikings paid you more than you were worth, potentially, back in 2017 when they cut that deal for you.
Yeah.
He then has gotten better. The Vikings gambled that you'd get better by overpaying you then, based on the production that you had had to that point. And the Vikings deserve to be rewarded on that, on the deal they gave you then.
But he's 29. I mean, that's, you know, and so that's where I think he's coming from. Is ultimately the second half of the year wasn't fantastic statistically. But overall, he was a 1,300-yard, nearly double-digit touchdown guy, right? So with that...
Semantics, but he's 28.
But he's turning 29 during the 2019 season.
Yes,
so,
that is
so,
training, yeah.
So if I'm looking at it, if I'm Mr. Barrett's who represents him, and I'm Adam, I'm thinking, okay, 29, I might have one last chance here to get a fat deal.
Mm-hmm.
And... If I'm them, I'm on the side of it with Charge, where I'd be very interested to see if conversations haven't already begun that at some point there's going to be a knock at the door and hey, let's get some more coinage in the pocket.
Which plays into something I kind of slow played with Charge last week, got a little more deeply into this week, specifically with Nacho Lieber yesterday. Do I believe the Vikings will select a quarterback at 18? Absolutely not. I don't believe they will. The low-key talker was this Kyler Murray. What do you do if you really, really dig him and he's available at 18? Your quarterback, I mean, we are in on Cousins. I'm cool with Cousins, and I'm really excited with a fortified offensive line, the Stefanski-Kubiak leadership, to see what a different type of schedule, what it gets us next year. But, you know, even if it gets us where we want to go, which hopefully would be the Super Bowl, in 2020, you know, if you want to bring back Kirk, it's going to be another fat deal,
yeah,
which prohibits you or it compromises your ability with Brian O'Neill, Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen in deals like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like this get compromised. So that's, you know, I know you forever. I've done the feast with you for 10 years. I swear you've said it for 10 years. You always should be drafting quarterbacks to have somebody in the stable as a legitimate replacement plan,
yep,
in case something goes pear-shaped.
Yep.
But you also recognize if you're not getting them in rounds one or two, you probably, I mean, the miss rate is dramatically higher than the hit rate.
Yeah, and so if you go past rounds three and four, then it's, you know, it's like almost 0%
right.
chance.
So, yeah, I believe it's 5% or less.
Yep.
The Vikings take a quarterback at 18, but when you take one in the first round, you have them for 5 years. Because you get that fifth year right.
Right.
You know, so that pragmatically speaking, in my opinion, not necessarily off the Cousins performance, forget the performance last year. Just think about what's going to transpire after the 2020 season financially, what the rest of the team looks like,
mm-hmm,
and find way, like, where are you going to get the money, you know?
Well, what was the number? I think 6 of the final 8 NFL teams that were in the playoffs this year had a quarterback on making in their rookie deal.
Yep.
And
right.
You know, it's just such a luxury to not have to pay that. How does that happen? At some point you have to spend draft equity on a capable quarterback,
yeah,
and get that guy up to the point where he's ready to play.
And so, maybe this isn't the year. Maybe, you know, maybe the Duke quarterback, maybe he's requisite of a first round pick, he'll go super high. Maybe Kyler Murray goes first overall. Who,
yeah,
knows? Maybe this is not the year, but it's definitely something about which to think. Be right back.
You're listening to PA in Charge. It's a Friday football feast, 9 to noon on The Fan.
Check this
out. Save the date, please. Put this on your calendar. It's the inaugural Mike Zimmer Golf Classic. It's happening May 13th at Bear Path Golf and Country Club. It's former and current Vikes, which is sweet. Local celebrities. They're going to team up with partners and sponsors. It's a day of golf. It's fun and prizes with a hole-in-one, longest drive, closest to the pin contest, all of that. And the proceeds, most importantly, go to the Mike Zimmer Foundation Outreach Programs. Get to KFAN.com, keyword community, for all the details.
Speaking of the Mike Zimmer Foundation, we at Canterbury Park have formed a stable called Double A Gap Stable, because you know how his players mug the Double A Gap in patented Mike Zimmer-like fashion. We have formulated, Chargy, a horse ownership group where Mike Zimmer is going to be one of the owners of a horse that we are going to claim or privately purchase in March or April, bring it back to Canterbury,
yeah,
and whatever profits, hopefully that there's a significant amount of profits here, we get the whatever his 10% is goes to the Mike Zimmer Foundation. So, like, we're designing silks now. We filled up the partnership.
I know what color the silks are.
Well, they got to be purple and gold.
We know the colors, but...
Now, can you put... The silks normally have got, like... They'll have, like, a checkerboard pattern or something very basic. Can you put, like, Viking horns on the silks?
I don't believe we can.
Is there some limit on the size and shape of the icons?
Well, no, there's... From a marketing or a standpoint of doing even what I'm doing right now, this is football coach Mike Zimmer.
Right.
He'll be part of Double A Gap Stables.
Yes.
He's a football coach joining the Canterbury Park announcer, Paul Allen, and eight others in a charitable partnership with a horse racing in purple and gold silks that won't have Helga horns. They won't have braids. Won't be a V on it. Probably a DAG, DAG.
DAG?
Double A Gap.
Oh.
So but all of the proceeds for his part of the partnership go to the Mike Zimmer Foundation.
I like it.
Which I think
now,
is
what
really
if I
cool.
want to, what if I want to join the ownership group? Nobody asked me. I'm kind of interested. Could I do that?
In. Yeah, we'll start a new one.
All right.
We'll make Bruce Boudreau the celebrity owner of that one.
I like the sound of that.
Have money, will travel.
Is Bruce going to be here for that?
Of course he will.
All right, good.
Why wouldn't he?
All right, good.
As we will, with the 10 o'clock talker, as we will hit, he guaranteed his team will make the playoffs.
Perfect.
They host New Jersey this evening.
Yeah.
Win.
That should be a win.
They have Anaheim here Tuesday for Vox in the Box. Win.
Win.
They get St. Louis after that. Dicey.
It's going to be tricky.
It's here. St. Louis, red hot. Win all three of those games. Go 500 the rest of the way in the postseason. Question is, which players will be on his team? And we will hit that with the 10 o'clock talker. But first, this.
I got five on it. It's the Friday Five, 9 to noon.
Oh, the Friday Five. Football-related talkers for the dynamic duo Friday Feast. We're going to start with an article that I saw. I know, Charch, you looked into this as well. I believe it's in your notes. Brian Hoyer. Now, years ago, Charch, you were made locally famous for talking about how Tom Brady, he's done. And he may not even be the best quarterback on the roster. That was,
right,
in fact,
that was when Jimmy Garoppolo was
Jimmy
the backup.
Garoppolo.
That's right.
Now, I think today we can definitely say with confidence that Tom Brady is the best quarterback on the Patriots roster.
Today he is, yes.
But is Brian Hoyer the best analyst in terms of quarterbacks on the Patriots roster?
Analyst?
This via Monday Morning Quarterback PA with Albert Breer explained how Brian Hoyer's experience with Sean McVay's offense actually impacted the Patriots defense making that game-changing play in Super Bowl 53, the interception by Mr. Stephon.
The announcer needs to be brought up to speed here. When did Brian Hoyer work with Sean McVay?
Okay, well, Hoyer got his first shot as a starter in Cleveland in 2014.
Okay.
He started 11 games for coordinator Kyle Shanahan, then played for Shanahan again in San Francisco in 2017.
Okay.
Rams coach Sean McVay coached tight ends for Mike and Kyle Shanahan in Washington.
Whoa.
Which led Hoyer to believe he might have some institutional knowledge or connection.
Oh.
So it's the 6 degrees of Shanahan bringing Mr. Hoyer to Mr. McVay.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what he explains. Before the Super Bowl, Hoyer sitting on his couch, okay, probably not analyzing playbooks as much as maybe the 41-year-old MVP is, but he watched an episode of Peyton Manning's Detail series on ESPN Plus featuring Jared Goff, and it hit him right away.
What?
The offense that the Rams play is the same as what he knew under the Shanahans during his time in Cleveland and again with the Niners.
You're kidding me.
Looking at the Rams tape confirmed it, he says. Then Hoyer went back to Amazon's All or Nothing series from 2016 on the Rams.
You're making all of this up.
This is for Monday Morning Quarterback.
And this is up to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
The backup had some spare time. Didn't anticipate playing in Super Bowl 53.
But it's legit.
It is legit. That All or Nothing series on the Rams, by the way, it was about the 2016 season. Had some footage of OTAs from McVay's first spring there. Hoyer recognized the language. Having played in that offense, quote, they don't have an answer for all-out pressure, Hoyer says. Their answer is for the quarterback to make a play. Hoyer's contribution didn't end there. While acting as the scout team QB, he gave the New England secondary a tip regarding those all-out pressures that would lead directly to Gilmore's interception.
This is spectacular.
Yeah.
We were all up there showing an all-out blitz, the way everyone's been seeing us moving around, says Devin McCourty. And Hoyer said, if I'm the quarterback, I'm just going to catch the ball and throw it deep. All of you are close, so I'm throwing it deep.
Yeah.
Sure enough, that week we started seeing it more. Mm. Kansas City did it. Green Bay tried to hit us with it.
Wow.
The adjustment, as Jason explained it, was for those in coverage at the snap to play off and read the quarterback.
And see that zero blitz that caught Goff off guard, and he just heaved it up to Gilmore, and there's your dagger. Belichick and Flores, now the Dolphins coach, they were patient enough and smart enough to wait and not use it the entire game until the perfect moment, and it worked.
Fast forward to the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 53.
Genius.
The Patriots dialed up specifically this type of all-out blitz that Hoyer said would give the Rams problems. Gilmore played off coverage at the snap with his eyes fixed on Goff right from the snap. Goff's reacted to the pressure by just lobbing up a back foot throw.
Yep.
Gilmore saw it all the way and made one of the easier interceptions of his career. He can thank Brian Hoyer for that.
That's brilliant.
How about that?
That is brilliant.
If he doesn't have Amazon Prime, he's out of luck. Thankfully, that Brian Hoyer had Amazon Prime and could break down the tape from 2016 or nothing.
But and maybe there aren't stories like that yearly. Maybe there are and we just don't hear about them.
Yeah.
It just shows you the depths that go in to winning the most coveted prize at the very highest level. And the angles and the edges and everything, every cliched rock that gets unturned to be able to win the most coveted prize at the very highest level.
Brian Hoyer, Super Bowl hero that you never would have guessed.
Unbelievable. On it.
We heard earlier this week, better if the mic's turned on, that Antonio Brown has requested a trade officially from the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is mostly for you, Charge. Of course, I want you to chime in as well, PA. But I'm looking at potential landing spots. Now, it's tricky because it's a trade potentially involved and all of that negativity with the off-field situation. Very proud of himself, very high on himself as one Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. He wants to go somewhere else, catch balls, score touchdowns, and maybe even win some games. So I'm going to throw out some team names, and you just analyze it, okay? And we're going to start with this one, Charge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a quarterback that you really like, Jimmy Garoppolo. The Niners have cap space and a need for a number one wide receiver. Your thoughts?
It's a great fit, and Shanahan would maximize him for sure. Great offensive mind, and right now their starting wide receivers are Dante Pettis and Marquise Goodwin.
Yeah.
There's need, there's cap space, and Antonio Brown's not going to be that expensive to get. The rumors going around right now is that he will fetch roughly a fourth round draft pick.
Okay,
and that's it.
Because it, because of the risk in the contract and everything else that comes with him, the age, teams aren't. He's not going to get a first round pick.
I have a an Antonio Brown team related prediction for the offseason when you get to said team.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to go with a team that has $110 million in cap space in the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Indianapolis Colts with an aging T.Y. Hilton.
Yep.
You like Ebron. The O-line is set. When you look at a team with a ton of cash and not a massive amount of offensive needs, they got plenty of room for the $36 million with A.B.
I think this is the most probable landing spot for him. If I were to pick one team, I would pick the Colts. They've got the need. They've got the room.
Yeah.
They've got the quarterback that makes sense to pair him up with.
I don't think he wants to live in Indianapolis.
But what he wants on this stuff may not even matter. Town.
That's what we got to do.
I understand that, but Antonio's personality is strong enough where if you do make a deal for Antonio, you do legitimately have to be concerned about him going Le'Veon Bell on it if he doesn't want to be there. And just not showing up. I think lifestyle and play and place he lives matters a lot to Antonio Brown.
So you think it's going to be the Jets?
Nope, and it's not going to be the... See, he lives in South Florida, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But the Dolphins are really, really stuck at quarterback.
Right.
And they're far... Believe it or not, I think they're farther behind than the team. Man, they're on par with the team I'm going to predict he goes to.
All right.
Anyway, what's next?
Okay, well, I'm going to throw... I got three more teams for you. And, well, you mentioned the Jets. I have the Jets here as well because it's Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. Quincy and Nunez is their best option. They got that fourth-round rookie tight end from last year, Chris Herndon, can make some plays. But other than that, the running game's in and out. You know, they need more from that end of things. And Sam Darnold needs a target.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that for AB.
Well, then we'll move on.
I don't like it for Sam Darnold either. If I'm in charge of making sure Sam Darnold turns into a great quarterback, I have a little bit of trepidation. As great as Antonio Brown is, and he'll catch it, you know, get open, he'll catch everything. But man, I'm worried about what Antonio Brown will do to my quarterback when he's not Ben Roethlisberger, and Sam Darnold's not Ben Roethlisberger, right? When Sam's throwing bad passes his way, what's AB going to do?
Right.
I'd be worried.
Okay, well, maybe then this is a similar situation because his team hasn't always necessarily stood behind him, it appears. The Oakland Raiders, future Las Vegas Raiders, with Derek Carr, no Amari Cooper any longer. Team does have three first-round picks, so if they're able to maneuver some of that currency around, and they need a guy for Derek Carr if they're going to commit to him.
I think that has potential, and I'm not exactly sure what to think long play-wise about Derek Carr. I'm baffled with Derek. I mean, he's regressed during his career. Mm-hmm. I like his skill set. I believe another year with Gruden will help Carr.
Are you sure about that?
I could be wrong with that. Yeah, that's why I'm baffled with Derek Carr.
Yeah.
But I think Oakland rightfully should be in this mix.
It makes sense, and Antonio Brown in Las Vegas feels right.
Right.
Doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
So if he can if Antonio Brown can just get through this year wherever they're going to play.
Yeah.
It's certainly a team with desperate need at the position. Jordy Nelson at the very bitter end of his career. And after that, Seth Roberts. And after that?
Right.
Don't
know.
Jared Cook. Let's go, Jared Cook.
Last team.
Jared Cook's a free agent. He's not even necessarily on the team.
Oh, my God. Arizona Cardinals will be the last team that I have. That's Kingsbury with the quarterback and all of that. You think so?
I think Antonio Brown to Arizona Cardinals. I believe Arizona takes Kyler Murray with the first overall pick in the draft.
Really?
They may make a Rosen-related move, or maybe they won't. Maybe they will recognize, and this is, who knows if Rosen and or Murray are going to be super good, but they may recognize, hey, Favre went into Rodgers. Montana went into Young.
Yeah.
Bob Greasy and or Johnny Unitas went into Earl Morrill. Phil Sims went into Jeff Hostetler.
Right.
It's not bad to have two.
It's not, no.
Kingsbury's connection to Kyler Murray is legit. It's deeply rooted, and it's legit. And when we head to the combine in a couple of weeks, that's when we start talking.
It'll be a topic.
When we start talking to the Adam Schefters and everything, I'm heading with that premise, that he takes Kyler Murray first. They have the money to get Antonio Brown. I think Antonio Brown with David Johnson, I think that he would like that. and I think he'd like that part of the country. With the right to change my opinion, if I go steamrolling, I am saying Antonio Brown, Arizona Cardinals.
Why do so many teams and coaches feel like at every position, it can be a positional battle, and we're going to let the best man win, and we want guys that thrive on competition, and we want to set guys up so that you know they have to play with everything they've got to earn a starting spot. Except our quarterback. Oh, we can't do anything like that with the quarterback position.
Yeah.
We got to have our main guy as our quarterback, and nobody can threaten that quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't have any good competition there because if we threaten the quarterback, Mr. Fragile is going to fall apart. It's ridiculous. I think the Cardinals should put a quarterback into that spot with the first overall pick because Josh Rosen, I saw nothing to suggest greatness from Josh Rosen.
Right.
Go let those kids battle and let the best man win.
A break from football on the Feast for a couple of segments. When we return, the head coach guarantees playoffs. The intrepid scribe drops a story saying the owner tells the GM, move whoever you want, and if we don't make the playoffs, it's fine. Something is fishy in the state of hockey. That next, it's 9 to noon.
It's the Friday Feast, where at some point, Charge will introduce a topic and PA will pretend to be interested. It's 9 to noon on The Fan.
I know, right? PA and Charge.
All right, Minnesota Wild take on the New Jersey Devils this evening shortly after 7 o'clock. Listen to the game with Bob Kurtz and Tom Reed on your home for the Minnesota Wild, FM 100.3 KFAM. After that, they get the Anaheimers Tuesday at the X. That is a Vox in the Box day. And then the St. Louis Blues here. That's the immediate future for the Minnesota Wild. Desperately clinging to a wild card spot, having lost a very frustrating game the other night, Pauly.
Mm-hmm.
They're down 1-0 on a double carom pinball off the...
Yeah, I saw that goal.
Yeah, off the post behind Dubnyk, 1-0.
Yep.
Not mad at the goalie. I mean, yeah, it'd be great if you stopped them all, but that was a... That's hockey, puck luck type goal.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, our squad's flying all over the place. I mean, they looked really, really good for at least that period. Opened up 3-1. Former right. Badger Luke Cunnan, he recently called up from Iowa, stealing the show. Tenacious, scrappy, fast. He's fit in beautifully, had a couple of goals. We're up 3-1. And so then, eventually, Mr. Boudreau's team executes one of the worst line changes you will ever see. And in having Bruce yesterday, there were many candid things he shared 9 to noon, including one where, hey, the state of hockey, elite hockey minds, greater hockey minds than you and I, they know changes, like when players come leave the bench and they do changes. Well, those aren't executed by the coaches, okay, which kind of moderately surprised me. They're generally executed by the players, and a major key here is identifying where the puck is at what part of the ice and whether it's good to jump
Now's
in.
The time or not.
Boom.
Yeah.
And we did it very poorly. It was an awful line change.
I didn't see the line change, so what was bad about that?
Well, the best player on the Philadelphia Flyers named Claude Giroux, their captain with the most points, was left by himself, skated right in on Dubnyk with a bomb scored.
Okay.
And now the game's 4-0 and they're 4-4 and there was nobody next to him. So there was nobody in front of him. So it's 4-4 and then we take a Nick Seeler takes a penalty. And Van Riemsdyk scores, and we lose 5-4. It was a very frustrating loss. in a series of frustrating, vibeless situations for this team this year. And the State of Hockey fan base subsequently booed Mr. Boudreau's team off the ice.
Wow.
So that was Tuesday. Yesterday morning, we started the show with Boudreau. Went through the bad line change, why Jason Zucker never gets close to scoring, a bunch of different things. And then, unprompted, out of nowhere, the head coach says this.
I can tell you right now, I mean, I'm not Joe Namath, but we're going to make the playoffs. And we're going to be somebody hard to deal with when that situation comes. And so it's I'm making that prediction right now.
Okay, so that's 9 to noon yesterday. Picked up by World of Hockey. It's on NHL.com.
Good.
KFAN splashing all over the place. Boudreau said this. Cool. All right, that's the day. Roll right on. Bruce jumped out with a guarantee, which players and coaches never, ever, ever do.
No. So why do you think he did it? And unprompted, why do you think he did that?
Well, very good question. And I was so, in the vibeless nature of Loserville, USA, outside of the Wolves' outstanding win against James Harden, you know, the Wild still being a playoff team. Miss Lindsay's team has won 5 consecutive games. The women's basketball team at the U.
Yeah.
Lindsay joins us quite frequently. You know, we're not even at the combine. We don't have free agency. Some big names for the football team may eventually get cut. Kirk Cousins, your guy, with a gesture of kindness, goes to Twitter the other day.
I know,
and he's like, "Hey, I'm in a good mood today. What should we do? One person wins a signed jersey. You want a signed helmet? You want a signed football? What do you want?" Well, if you had gone through the mentions. I mean, it seriously was walking dead-like, and walkers got into the compound.
We want our money back.
And started nibbling on him.
Yeah,
so it's the vibeless nature of Loserville, USA. Well, so I didn't really think about what led Bruce on this radio show to make that guarantee. With the exception go ahead.
Do you think it's a certain amount of desperation? Is that a desperate statement from a desperate coach?
Well, see, I know Bruce well enough. Off the microphone, and he's gracious enough to join the show weekly, where Bruce has conviction. Bruce is all in on the presentation as it is now. The you know, Stahl, Coyle, Zucker, Granlin, whomever, not performing to their expectations at this moment, I think really, really grates on Bruce because he wants to be the guy to push the right button to get it out of them at the right time. So I thought when it happened yesterday, I kind of felt it was like, bleep this. I see enough things with Cunnan and Erickson Ek and Dubnyk and some other people. Mm-hmm. And I know this is going to turn around and we're going to make the playoffs. And when we make the playoffs, we are going to be a team with whom teams are going to have to deal, to reckon. Well, middle of the afternoon at The Athletic, Russo Radio, Michael Russo, who I believe is in studio at the Fan today, 12:15 to 1.
Yes,
he drops a story that, you know, quoting sources, and I'm gonna say this is 99.9% right because Michael is the best at what he does, and he's not gonna put it out there just to boondoggle the fan base and get clicks and or subscriptions for The Athletic.
Right,
it's dead accurate. He drops a story that says the owner of the Minnesota Wild has told the general manager, paraphrasing, move whomever you want and do whatever it is needed up to the trading deadline to make this thing long play better, even if it means not making the playoffs this year.
All right. What? So within a matter of hours.
What in the hell is happening right here?
Well, I think both, it sounds incongruous, right? Our coach is saying we're going to make the playoffs, and then we have sources inside the front office saying everybody's available for trade.
And our coach,
at the cost of making the playoffs.
When the coach made the guarantee, he didn't go down the road of, you know, this is happening with Stahl, it will get better. This is happening with player B, it will get better. I feel good about the whole thing. We will be a tough team with whom to deal once we get into the postseason. It was unprompted. He offered it up to us. It was splashy. It was fantastic. Then the elite beat writer drops the, hey, the owner's told the GM, do whatever it takes. And if we don't make the playoffs, I'm cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling, and I have not talked or texted with Boudreaux since yesterday morning regarding all of this. So I'm completely speculating here. I feel Boudreaux knew that between the owner and the GM that this confab has taken place and that there are going to be some maybe significant players moved here within the next week, 2 weeks and change, whatever it is, and he may not be a fan of it. He has a year left on his deal at least next year, and you know now they swapped Nino for Rask. The Rask bit's not great.
Yeah, I've seen very little support for that move.
Yeah, and I'm not prisoner of moment where I look at 2 or 3 weeks of a new player and be like, okay, that sucks forever. This Boteto we brought in, with all due respect, he's new. He's played a large part in costing the team the last two games.
Yes.
Specifically the most previous game against the Flyers. Mm. The Pontus Aberg bit, he's not playing. He's out with injury. Brad Hunt, who they got from Las Vegas, I think he's a defenseman. He might even play wing tonight because Aberg, Rask, and Hendricks are hurt. So Bruce is having to do a lot of shuffling right now and a lot of reconfiguring, and I'm guessing the last thing he wants to hear is we currently are slotted in a playoff position.
Yeah.
We have our best players outside of Parisi not playing as well as I know they can play, and they will play better, and you're telling me that you're going to start moving players, which is going to make it very difficult for Bruce to get this team to the postseason. So I'm guessing Bruce verbally circled the wagons 9 to noon yesterday saying, with the guys we have here, I guarantee you we make the playoffs and we're going to be tough. So then if the GM moves players and they don't make the playoffs,
yeah,
the coach can be like, what am I supposed to do here?
Because he doesn't want to be the one holding the bag on this. What else would you want your coach to say? He's saying what every coach should say in this situation.
But none of them,
I'm playing to win. I'm playing to get into the playoffs, and I'm playing to move advance in the playoffs.
Right, but none.
No coach ever comes out and says I'm playing for the rebuild.
No charge, but none of them phrase it up the way we heard it.
Well, yeah. It was very specific.
He just called a shot.
Yeah, he called a shot. Nobody ever does that.
No.
And it wasn't even with me leading. Really?
Yeah.
Nobody. And it wasn't with me leading down the road of, hey, Bruce, honestly, what do you think the chances are your team makes the playoffs?
No, I understand.
It was unprompted, and there had to be more to the story. I knew there was more to the story. I didn't know what more there was to the story.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing now that he may have known this Russo radio bit was dropping later in the day. Or he certainly being the coach of the team and working intimately with the general manager and or the owner, he knows what the modus operandi is and that there probably will be players traded.
It could have been coordinated between the two. It could be that the front office and Boudreaux were on the same page with this, and the front office is going to move guys. They're going to move Eric Staal. But they want to make sure that the coach is out there telling this fan base we are still playing to win.
Zero chance.
See, I look at it differently. I think that if Mr. Fenton, and I assume he did, got wind of what Boudreaux said on our show, if I'm the general manager, I'm pissed off. I'm not happy about it because now he sets the precedent where Fenton ultimately will be the bad guy if he moves people and the team misses the playoffs. Because the head coach is out there circling the wagons and rallying the troops. Let's get this thing done. Things have been negative. The good guys got to play better, and it's been L's and L's and L's, and that sucks, but we are still in a playoff spot. Meanwhile, the guy that's executing the tweaks and trying to make maybe some bigger plays is going to look like he's giving up on this season and shortchanging the fan base by dropping an L on this season. If I'm Fenton, I'd be mad about him putting that out there.
That's why I don't think that they necessarily weren't acting in concert with this, because they have to talk to each other, look each other in the face every day.
Right, but
Fenton's
guy.
But they still have to work together, and if you're going to go on 100,000 watts of radio spread across the entire fan radio network and make a statement that says, we're going to make the playoffs, give me these guys and I'll go make the playoffs and we'll do some damage. And then after immediately go drive to Excel and go look Paul Fenton in the face, knowing that he didn't want you to say that.
But maybe
I don't know that that's realistic.
Maybe there is a lack of solidification or a lack of cohesiveness from what the front office wants to do compared to what the coach wants to do. And so maybe...
And that happens? You know, I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, and again, we are assuming Russo Radio's piece is dead accurate. And I believe it to be dead accurate.
Is. Yeah, probably
right.
Is.
So,
and that's what the fans want.
The general manager has not come out and said, hey, you know, the owner told me I can move whomever I want to make this team better for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And it may mean not making the playoffs this year. And the owner is fine with that.
If the GM didn't say any indication, the fan base right now for the Wild.
The what?
The fan base for the Wild.
For what?
Want the meltdown. They want to see this team do full rebuild. That's the impression that I got.
Get
do
that
you guys
feeling.
See it any differently
I
than
I get that feeling, and I heard you say it last year, and this is last week. I'm not taking a shot at you. I am not a fan of people splashing on the narrowcasting leader, cracking a microphone, or just firing off with the blow it up. Okay? Because when you say blow it up and you have contracts to Zach Parise and Ryan Suter like you have,
mm-hmm.
with no trade clauses, and you have things contractually set with this team the way they are, it's easy to say blow it up, but I want to hear people follow up with, okay, how? Like who and where and what would you get and how would you offset it? I mean, I'm all in favor of the Wild. I do not believe, with all due respect, the Wild is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender this year.
Right.
I believe the Wild can make the playoffs, and in a Western Conference that has not been as good as I thought it would be, I do believe the Wild, currently the way it's currently constructed, can win a playoff series. I can't say that they can win multiple series, but I think they'd have a shot to win in the first round. And I do believe the West is more wide open than I thought
than
it would be.
Than it usually is.
Correct. And Nashville and Winnipeg may and Vegas may start separating themselves from the pack. But you know when
well, but I think there is a generally held consensus on what we would end up doing with some of the veterans and who some of those names are, because we're seeing a lot of the same names come up
and what we would get in return.
Yeah, well, and that part I can't say, because I'm not nearly enough of a hockey wonk to know.
Hey,
but
guess what? If they trade Charlie Coyle, I'm not going to be blown away.
Right.
But I just don't, when I think on the surface, okay, you've traded Charlie Coyle and that deal, what are you going to get in return?
Yep.
When everybody in the league knows Charlie, with all due respect, has not lived up to expectations. So let's potentially get into this later, because we have your guy around the corner. Joe Imholt, a vice president of visitor experience at the Science Museum in St. Paul, to talk about a 10,000 square foot arcade at said Science Museum today, starting today through May, and something called Game Changers. That's next, but first, keyword time.
Text SUPER to 200-200. The word is SUPER to 200-200. It's a national cash contest. Put a grand in your hand. Text the word SUPER to 200-200. Text message and data rates do apply.
It's PA in Charge on the Fan.
Alrighty, 10:25 in the neighborhood. Welcome back, and welcome to Joe Imholt. He is the Vice President of Visitor Experience at Science Museum in St. Paul. And he joins the Friday Football Feast to chat about Game Changers, which begins today at the Science Museum's U.S. Bank Great Hall. It has been transformed into a 10,000-square-foot video arcade and encompasses video games not only from now, but really all the way through the history of video games. And Joe's here to chat with us now. Joe, Paul Allen, Paul Charchian, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
With what's going on with Game Changers, I have a few questions for you, because it involves the history of video games. And then the host of Video Games Weekly, he will dominate the conversation with better questions than I can provide. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Not sure what year it transpired. I would like to know what went into the genius move with Pac-Man and or Ms. Pac-Man to speed up Ms. Pac-Man and make it the fast version, because the slow version was way too boring.
I am absolutely with you. The fast version of Ms. Pac-Man is far superior. I completely agree.
What led to the decision?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but it's interesting. Unrelated to this exhibit at all, I was actually Googling that not too long ago because I can knock out 100,000 on that fast version, no problem. But the slow version is torture.
Yeah. Isn't it weird that we can do better at the fast version than the slow version?
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, the slow version, it's almost like you have too much time to think. And, you know, you think yourself into a ghost, next thing you know.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. It's too true.
Really, whether it's Skyrim, Grand Theft Auto, Ms. Pac-Man, Pac-Man Asteroids, Dig Dug, Space Invaders, whatever, not many more stimulating feelings than waiting by that flashing dot for the ghost to get right next to you and then rolling over it and eating all four of them and then mashing on the dots and the fruit.
Especially that banana.
It's absolutely the best. Okay, my last one, unless Charge needs to take a breath. In Asteroids, when you hit hyperspace, do you feel that was effective or do you feel it was a feature with that game that was not needed?
I think it was not needed. It's interesting. I think that the game was, there was enough to the game already. But it was an era where they were experimenting with different things. They were trying different interfaces and so forth. So I could see where they were going with it, but I don't think it's necessary.
There were people so good at Asteroids.
Oh,
they would have competitions. And the only way you would lose Asteroids is if eventually you had to sleep or use the bathroom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even then, you could use the bathroom fast enough. You'd have so many lives piled up. If you use the bathroom fast enough, you know, you'd lose three or four ships while you're in the bathroom. You'd come back out and keep playing.
The art in Galaga, the art of getting the second ship that fires.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
It's an art. I mean, it's not just part of a video game. It's an art because you get it and then you hold on to it as long as you can and the points just rack up.
It's true. And what's even fun nowadays is playing Super Smash Brothers and getting that assist trophy and having that be your assist trophy and, your kid sitting next to you and going, what's happening?
Yeah.
I love that.
So, let's talk for a minute about the old games you've got on display here, because part of the reason I want to go to Game Changers is to bring my daughter, who's 13, and let her see the games that, you know, that I grew up on and what passed for a video game back then. Talk to me about the trailblazers, the revolutionary people and games that people will be able to experience firsthand at Game Changers.
Yeah, Paul, what you describe is exactly one of the things that is really wonderful about this exhibit is families will go through it. The parents will be the experts at the beginning part as we talk about the arcade heroes. But as you move through the exhibit, that role of expert really transfers over to the kids as we get into the newer games that are popular today. But in the arcade hero section, my favorite video games that are in there are the video games Defender and Robotron.
Yeah.
Those are classics that were developed by a designer by the name of Eugene Jarvis.
I've talked to Eugene. We've had him on Video Games Weekly before.
Oh, really?
I think in my personal opinion, he is the single most important video game designer of that era.
Wow.
Yeah, he really had this notion of playing up defense more than offense, which really comes through both in Defender and Robotron. As that sort of anxiety you get when you play those games, it's a little bit different. And I think that the way he thought about video games in that way was really trailblazing in an era of trailblazers.
Totally agree. And now, can people? There's 100 playable games at Game Changers at the Science Museum. Does that include some of these old historic arcade cabinet games from the 80s?
Oh, yeah, there is. So Robotron's there, Defender's there, Donkey Kong's there. I just played a ton of Tempest this morning.
Oh, Tempest was so good.
Isn't it?
Yes.
So there are a lot of really, the games that you forgot about, Xevious is there.
Mm.
It's a really fun kind of blast of the past. You're flashing back to the pizza parlor or the movie theater, wherever you used to encounter those games.
Yeah, those were the games that started the industry, and these are the games that if you wanted to play video games, we didn't have a home console that was worth a damn back then. There was that period of time we had the Atari 2600, we had the Intellivision, then home video games went dark for like 15 years until the NES came out, and that's what if you wanted to play video games, you were playing those.
Exactly.
In the arcade.
If you wanted to play for a long time, you had to make those quarters last, and so you really dialed it in and focused.
Talk to me about the Game Changers section of the Game Changers exhibit.
So game changers is when just as that era that you kind of mentioned where the video games moved from being outside the home to inside the home, mm-hmm. And really focuses on the innovations around consoles. So from like Sonic to The Sims is the era that we're kind of talking about in game changers, and really focusing on the game designers that kind of brought gameplay and the style of games into the kind of the era that we know it now.
I'm glad you mentioned Sonic. A lot of people don't understand with Sonic how big, if you didn't experience it firsthand, how important that game was, mm-hmm. in terms of adding it was a fast moving platforming game with an iconic character, and it really was transformative for the Sega Genesis in particular, but for all of video games.
Completely agree, and it really took the kind of traditional side scroller up a whole nother notch, and it's seminal in the game. And so the whole exhibit features a lot of Sonic and the design team, the Sonic team that came into the thinking for that game.
Not to turn this into all about me, but you mentioned Will Wright in SimCity, and I'll tell this story. I've mentioned it on Video Games Weekly before, but I'll tell this story briefly. I worked at Southdale when I was in high school, at what was a store called Software Etc., which would later become GameStop. And when SimCity first came out, it was on the Mac. It was the first iteration of it ever was on the Mac. And I was our Mac guy because I had a Mac for my college purposes. It was college, not high school. And when it came out, the day it came out, we got this, and I'm like, what is this thing? Never heard of SimCity. Nobody had heard of SimCity. Zero buzz. Totally anonymous. And it looks like a civics class. And I popped it open on my Mac and put it on the Mac in the store back then, and loved it so much that I ended up buying it on launch day. And I've contended to this day, Joe, that I might be literally the first person to have ever bought a SimCity game, because I bought it on launch day on the original console it came out for on the Mac.
That's incredible. The designer for that game, I think, gives one of my favorite quotes about video games. He talks about how games, they tell us stories, they offer us music, they give us challenges, they allow us to communicate and to play. And I think his way of thinking about that really shows through in SimCity, but really shows through and out throughout the entire exhibit, how video games like this really allow us to combine a bunch of things together and interact with each other in a really fun way.
Yeah, and Will Wright's games are noted for not necessarily having a boss at the end and a story at the end and a guy you got to go kill.
Yep.
Couple of quickies to close here for Joe Imholt, Vice President, Visitor Experience, Science Museum in St. Paul. Now, once again, Game Changers is taking place at the Science Museum right now, a 10,000 square foot video arcade. It will be in play through Sunday, May 5th. Get information at smm.org. And with admission to Game Changers, it's included in a regular Science Museum exhibit gallery admissions, $19.95 for adults, $14.95 for kids, ages 4 to 12, and or seniors. So learn more at smm.org.
Anything sports-related at this exhibit?
There aren't a ton of sports. I'm trying to think through in the indie section. There are more kind of sports themes, but they're not the NFL, NHL live games that I think you're probably thinking of.
Yeah. And, you know, and there were a lot of people listening going, NHL 93. Oh, so good.
So good.
Yes. 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 You know, and I think, you know, I would like to get, now, maybe it's because this, and this is a roving, this is like a roving exhibit, right? That goes sort of, from home to home. Is that right?
That is correct.
Originally from Australia. So maybe they just figured, you know what? Maybe they just don't know hockey in Australia.
I think the way they went through this exhibit was really focusing on the designers and telling the story of video game evolution through the designers. Mm-hmm. And I think they were just the designers for those games probably were not highlighted.
Yeah, that is true too. Who was the designer of NHL? You know, 93. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. One other quick one for you. You also touch on some of the independent game designers that ended up making a big name for themselves. You know, as one really obvious example, Notch, who, you know, created Minecraft and then sold it for $3 billion to Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And other examples that people will be familiar with are Fruit Ninja or Angry Birds. But my favorite in the indie section is Parappa the Rapper.
Oh, yeah.
That is one of my all-time favorite games, and I was so tickled to see it in the exhibit. But I've just got into this. Just this morning, I was playing this game, and I'm trying to find it. It's Getting Over It with Bennett Fedley, and it's this crazy game where you're half in a cauldron and you've got a hammer and you drag yourself and flip yourself around. And indies are game designers that don't have the backing of a major company with them, and they really experiment with story and gameplay. And this game is just crazy addictive, and all you're using is a mouse to control it, and it's really fun.
I had never heard of it. Just pulled it up. Looks great.
Yeah.
Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Body, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, best of luck with the Game Changers, and thanks for the time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Joe Imholt with the Science Museum, again, for the Game Changers and the 10,000-square-foot video arcade. Learn more at smm.org. Back after this.
It's PA in Charge.
They're Hollywood as hell, but they're still very good.
On the Fan.
To noon. PA and Charge.
Chad Greenway in studio 9 to noon for a couple of segments about 10-15 minutes from now. Former game-changing linebacker, favorite football team in studio around the corner. But let's put a bow on this.
I got five on it. It's the Friday 5, 9 to noon.
We've gone through two of the Friday Five. We'll start with number three. I thought this was interesting. NFL-related news with an NBA bent in that Adam Silver, quote-unquote, via ESPN.com, hasn't given any thought to inquiries by NFL owners. This article states that Silver would not explicitly confirm that he's been approached by NFL owners. Sources close to ESPN says that several NFL owners have indeed tried to persuade Silver to run their league over the course of his 5 years as the NBA's commissioner. Silver also has been approached by a number of Fortune 500 companies. Well-liked guy, this Adam Silver.
Yeah. The reputation's awesome. Players love him. Fans love him. The owners for whom he works love him. They just gave Roger Goodell a new 5-year, $20 million a year deal.
Yeah.
They're going to force him out on that? And there's no way that he's not going to. That's guaranteed money. Gotta believe that Roger, a lawyer, got himself that money guaranteed.
5 years, $20 million. 5 years, up to $200 million.
No, that was it. $200 million. I thought it was $5 million a year.
$200 million.
Sorry,
over
I was off by
of
several orders
years.
Of magnitude on that.
Might have a covenant cleanup here. Hold on.
Okay.
Wild game this evening. 7:30 puck drop. Covenant cleanup provided by nobody. Wild 7:30 puck drop this evening on the Fan. I had been saying 7 earlier. Go ahead.
But given the situation, so Silver, longtime NBA league employee, longtime hoops fan, he says, "I just haven't given it any thought. I feel fortunate to be in this position, i.e., NBA commissioner. To become the commissioner of this league was beyond anything I even ever dreamed of as a kid. But it is worth noting if NFL owners are indeed reaching out to Mr. Silver." Maybe there's secretly some trouble in the covenant. It's worth noting that NBA league revenues have increased from just under $5 billion to more than $9 billion over the course of Silver's first 5 years in charge. Team valuations have also increased by nearly 260%. Yeah. So he's doing his job, and he's also under contract until the, let me find it here, 23-24 season. You also mentioned, Charge, that... That Mr. Goodell is in a contract for another 5 years too. So
you know, this isn't
at some
happening.
Point, though,
this is not happening.
I don't even know where it came from.
I don't either. This sounds like total bunk, and I wonder if Adam Silver would ultimately be able to use this as leverage. But he's under contract for another 4 or 5 years.
You know what this is though? This is the classic like we're going to let something leak out into the news to take a temperature. It's a little bit of a heat check, not for today,
maybe,
but a few years down the road. Adam Silver, I deny all reports about being asked about being the NFL commissioner. I'd never dream of that. 3 years later, he's in the chair.
Yeah,
maybe. Maybe they're just starting at what will ultimately be a lengthy process. But Silver's done many very, very shrewd things. And not the least of which is he almost personally advanced the sports betting narrative in America by getting the NBA on board to support legalized sports betting.
Yeah. Hmm.
And that was an extremely important move because the perception out there was all of the leagues don't want this and they all think this is bad. And he was the first guy to go out and say the NBA supports legalized sports betting and here's why. You know, here's why we think it's good for everybody and here's why we should adopt it. And Silver was very smart and very shrewd and he comes across as a new kind of thinker for the game. And I you know, he's beloved. I'd love to have him for the NFL, by the way.
Egads.
I saw this article. You guys have heard of Jeffrey Simmons, defensive big-timer from Mississippi State, projected top 15 yeah. type pick.
ACL, right?
ACL injury, he is out. But prior to that, he was in the news because as a five-star commit trying to enroll at Mississippi State, back in 2016, he was caught on video hitting a woman. And he was trying to break up a fight between his sister and another woman. He punched that woman. And he was still allowed to enroll at Mississippi State. There was some negativity. Plays 3 years, zero problems with the Bulldogs, but he was not allowed to participate. He was not invited to the 2019 NFL Combine because of that. And so now there is another individual. His name's Jalen Ferguson of Louisiana Tech. He got in a fight with another guy at a restaurant a couple of years ago, charged with misdemeanor or petty battery. And had to pay a $189 fine. He moved on years later. He's trying to advance his football career, and the NFL has rescinded his invite after it came back from a simple background check that he was involved in it. My simple question to you guys is, players, due to previous legal-related issues, should they be allowed to participate in the NFL Combine? And according to Matt Miller, a recent article he wrote, he talked to an unnamed GM that thinks it's ridiculous that the league is not giving them an opportunity to vet these guys via the combine process and that the league is simply trying to protect its own image. And so the idea is the league is talking out of both sides of its mouth where they allow individuals like Kareem Hunt, who recently signed by the Cleveland Browns. He may still have an NFL life, but on the front end, they feign morality or conviction from the standpoint that they don't allow these kids to participate in the combine. Your thoughts?
Three things. Chad Greenway for bringing the caribou. Can I get some covenant claps? Secondly, there's a Breaking Bad movie released December 31st of 2019 on Netflix.
Yeah.
That looks pretty fat.
Yeah.
Thirdly, A-section terrorism with this part of the Friday Five. Take it away.
My opinion, the Combine should have nothing. It's not a barometer for whether or not you're a good person. You know, the Combine is about making guys go do the cone drill and go, what's your 40 time and how tall are you?
But having the
what's
right,
your broad jump?
But there is something that goes into having the right to be at the Combine, a National Football League sanctioned event.
Or the privilege.
Yeah, the privilege to take the next step.
Unless the NFL is going to say your actions are so bad, you can't be in the NFL at all. If they're going to say that, then don't bring him to the combine.
If
you're not going to go that far, then and teams want this player to be at the combine because they want to get the data on him and they want to get the analytics and everything else and they want to interview the kid, then you should let it. Then you should let him go.
The egregious nature back in the day of Chad Greenway growing up on a farm in South Carolina, South Dakota, absolutely abusing the teats.
I always loved that one.
While milking,
yeah,
went highly underreported.
Yeah.
So why does he get to massage those teats and abuse those teats and then like just put utter cream on and we're all going to forget about it? Yet he got a fair crack.
I always loved that one.
At the combine. So that that's highly underreported.
Yeah, but his hometown paper hid the news.
I know.
See, that's the
buried
thing. Because they wanted somebody to come out of their hometown.
Right.
For the love of all kids that grew up on farms, can we stop talking about this right now?
That Guernsey just happened to disappear.
Yeah.
Oh. Funny. Nobody can find the Guernsey to testify about what happened.
Yeah, slap some utter cream on and we're just fine. We're going to move on with our lives, go to the combine, make millions.
Yeah, you know.
I think it's crap.
Moo means moo.
Black spots matter.
Yeah, that's right. Black spots matter. Yeah. And there you are, massaging teats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, what did I walk into here this morning?
You brought coffee, so...
My goodness. You needed the coffee, apparently.
It's going to get worse.
The best.
Exactly. Last one.
By the way, that Black Spots Matter line came from Paul Charchian masking his voice to sound like mine.
Yes.
All tweets go to at Paul Charchian.
Last one I had for you, that both Colin Kaepernick and Tim Tebow reportedly were approached to play in the AAF. Tim Tebow prefers his baseball path. He's currently in the Mets organization in spring training. Best of luck to Tim Tebow. Colin Kaepernick, however, it was reported, he asked if he was going to play in the AAF. He wanted nothing to do with the league-mandated three-year, non-guaranteed $250,000 contracts in place for every single player. He wanted nothing to do with that.
Yeah, okay.
He asked for an excess of $20 million participate.
When everybody else is making seven large a game, okay.
And so, lots of opinions around Cap, whether he wants to play football, really, how good he was when he played. Of course, there's the kneeling during the anthem portion of the equation.
Yeah.
Social justice, he's connected with Nike, all these things. There's a lot of things swirling around.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, would you say that playing in the AAF, if he really wants to play professional football, would that be a good opportunity for him? Is it a slap in the face?
I think
Does it hurt his collusion case?
I think it's brilliant.
How ridiculous is it?
AAF marketing asked him. Knowing that they had to have had intel that it was ridiculous and he's going to say no. So now they're getting a lot of splashy marketing this week off a pretty successful first week. Secondly, it's my opinion, I don't think NFL owners, general managers, or coaches need to see Colin Kaepernick play football to know that he probably still can play football. Personally speaking, I think it's markedly more deeply rooted than that. So that's my take. Pretty good take.
Right? It's a league where every player
right now.
It's a league where every player gets the same contract, $80,000.
Yeah. Yes.
And a quarterback who has not played in 3 years demands $20 million from the league. I mean, if he wants to make his case, case that he's got
he wants to make
I
his
could
kingdom.
Have been playing because I'm still good.
If he wants to end the league, he should take $20 million and ask for $20 million. I mean, that thing could end immediately. First of all, brilliant marketing on behalf of the league to get him involved and just get people talking about it in general, right? Because people want to see it and talk about it and what's going on. And,
like Ray Duck Vodka.
Decent first week, and all of a sudden now you're trying to get Kaepernick for $20 million, and he asked for $20
million.
And the reality is he can, you know, he could play. He maybe can still play, but when you're out of the NFL for 3 years, nobody really knows because guess what? There's guys coming in every year that are really good.
Right.
Yeah. You know, look, I mean, as controversial as you are from the Mount Vernon days with the abusing of the teats.
Very controversial.
Grey Duck Vodka and its original marketing partnership or marketing director, they wanted to go with Kenny Anatolo.
Why wouldn't you want to?
Or Jasper Brinkley.
Okay, KO.
But then that person was out. Next one rolled in. Let's get Chad Greenway. Look at Grey Duck now.
Yeah. Here we are 6 months later.
And
just rolling it in.
Courtesy of Grey Duck, Chad Greenway in studio, 9 to noon on the Friday Football Feast. He's next, PA in charge, Friday Fan.
It's PA in charge on the Fan.
They sat in an abandoned luncheonette, sipping imaginary cola and drawing faces in the tabletop dust. His voice was rusty from years as a sergeant in this man's army. He was old and crusty.
PA and charge.
She was 20 when the diner was a baby.
Fire away.
He was a dishwasher.
Time for two more.
Busy in the back. Yeah. His hands covered with gravy.
Game is over.
All right. Hey, 11:03 in the Love Covenant. Chad Greenway, former game-changing linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings in studio. Can I get a witness? And a raucous round of applause for Mr. Chad Greenway.
Always nice to come in studio, boys.
Hi,
it's
buddy.
Just, it's just more fun coming in here.
It is. Buddy.
It's not the same
talking.
When you're on the phone.
I know. It's,
nah, it's not.
You know, our Friday football feast, you call in. It's like, it's just not the same to be
nope.
here and see PA's beard and where it's going these days. And
I tried to trim it this morning. Did I do okay?
You look good. I'll say that.
Did I do okay?
You look more trimmed than last time. I was like, I was worried about you last
Unkempt.
Time.
Unkempt. Yeah, I'm going to promote.
It's February 15th. And there's just not a lot going on in the football world, so
no.
PA's just sad and just
I'm good.
Beard guy.
No, I'm going to, what I'm doing, the long play with my look, with the fact I haven't cut my hair in 3 months. I haven't fully shaved in quite some time, but now I have one of those sneaky razors where I'm trying to, like, shape it.
Yep.
I'm going to endorse a beer and then be the least interesting man in the world.
I don't know,
I
though.
I always love that one.
You look good. I got to say, the beard is a good look for PA.
Come on!
It really is. It's not blowing smoke here. That is just legit
really?
Honesty. Yes.
No, it is.
I think it's a
and
good look.
I've told him the same thing, but it has to
what
be
about
kept.
My hair?
If he lets it go too far, it doesn't work.
I think too far doesn't
what
work.
About my the hair?
The, you know, you got a little mud flap going on the back there. The hockey boys would love it because it's kind of getting to hockey hair a little bit.
Girls, though.
Come
on!
Yeah. it's more of a guy's look. You know, if the guys are going to like it, the girls are going to say, you should cut that.
A very special guest joining us in studio now. What's your name, young man?
Jacob McCullough.
Where are you from?
Minnetonka.
How old are you?
I'm 13.
How'd you get in studio?
I have a friend named Dylan, and his dad works here.
Okay.
And I'm lucky enough to be here for Career Day.
Okay, and with Career Day, young man, you're wearing a Viking sweatshirt for
love
that.
Love it.
We appreciate you.
It's a good man right
you
there.
You recognize... The heel, I mean the individual who brought you in studio today, David Sinekin.
Yeah.
It's the upper Midwest identity of Green Bay Packers football. Were you comfortable on the car ride?
I've been to his house a couple times, and his son Dylan really likes the Packers.
What?
I know.
It's embarrassing.
You should, you know, he's got another son named Jackson that you should really be friends with.
I'm tripping. Yeah, I'm tripping.
Jackson's the one you want to hang with.
Dave's always said Jackson was his favorite kid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what?
Right.
Now, last one. Last two. What's your name again, Lucas?
Jacob.
All right, so you rolled in here. We got Chad Greenway in here. What are you looking to accomplish from the Friday football feast?
Listen on what it's like to work here and see what happens, I guess.
Okay.
So in other words, you should go sit with Nordo to actually see
somebody actually works. Yeah,
somebody actually works
so
here.
Age 13, are we 8th or 9th grade?
8th grade.
Okay, Insta?
Jacob McCullough.
No, don't say it on
that. It was a yes, no for Insta.
Yeah.
Yes, no for Snap.
Yes.
Yes, no forever saying I know, right?
Definitely.
What about same?
No.
You never like...
Same.
Jacob, do you like the Vikings?
Yes.
Same. So you never do that?
No.
Okay, and finally...
First of all, he's crushing this right now.
Huge.
He walked in.
Nice deep voice,
You got beard going on, the wild hair. Charts is over here looking like a schoolboy compared to you with your beard.
It's true.
And Jacob just crushes.
Thank you.
Well done.
Jacob, finally.
Yeah.
When your chaperone, David Sinekin, rolled up today... In a dark van that did not have windows.
I always love that one.
How concerned were you?
Creepy.
Why did you have to make it so weird? Okay. White panel van.
He's really going after Abbott today.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah.
With a Titletown bumper sticker on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is weird.
How'd that work out for the last few days?
He doesn't have a bathroom that's in that van. It has a sink and it's full service.
All I know is Dave did. Dave, after he tried to trip me and then heckle me a little bit for being a Viking, he did say that he would have rather had me than A.J. Hawk. So my day is made.
All right.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. My day is made. 06 draft. No, I believe him. I looked at his eyes. It looked truthful.
You know why he's a fraud? Because when we took you, he said, we got the right one. Abdul Hodge.
Well, now he's not wrong there.
What are you talking about?
Because Abdul Hodge was the right one for a few years, you know, barring the injuries. Quick update on Abdul Hodge, your former Packer, Dave. Just got the outside linebacker's job at University of South Dakota.
Really?
Wow.
Coyotes.
How about that?
Yeah, getting back into the business. He will be phenomenal out there for the Yotes.
Main man, welcome in studio. We're going to do our thing, okay?
All right. Now, wait. Before we go, Jacob.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking about a career in radio, the lead question should have been, do you like money?
Of course.
then you have no business being here. You may as well leave now.
If you want to be the voice of the Vikings... And you want to do radio?
Well, now we're talking.
And you want to do a couple spots? Maybe the Continental Diamond spot? Now you're talking. So PA is getting a little older. You know, by the time you're done, I think he'd be in the spot open for you.
Right.
He's got the pipes for it.
Welcome. Good to see you, kiddo.
Thank you.
I mean, one more thing I'm going to jump in on. You mentioned today's February 15th. What'd you do February 14th, Chad? What happened at home for Valentine's Day?
Valentine's Day.
Intimately, what happened at home?
Exactly. Well, funny to say that my wife flew to Arizona on Valentine's morning. At about 7 a.m.
To see your other husband?
With my oldest daughter and my third daughter for a soccer tournament this weekend.
Jared Allen was on the same flight.
potentially.
Sorry.
So I woke up. And got my 8-year-old to school and had the 2-year-old, and we just messed around all day. I took the other two daughters left at home that I'm now in charge of for the weekend out to Valentine's dinner. That was basically it. We did Valentine's the night before.
You and your wife did.
Yeah, you know, we keep it pretty simple. You know, we're 12 years into marriage, been together for 16.
You're
the flowers and chocolate stage. We're not doing much else. So
you still do the flowers and the chocolates?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Got to do something. Actually, this year,
handwritten card.
I get so sick of spending the money on flowers that just go away in a week.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to go to the plant route. Something that lasts a little longer. I like fresh plants in the house.
You're an entrepreneur, so medicinal marijuana.
Well, not yet, but you know,
when it comes to plants.
Yeah, when we touch our 40s and we have the aches and pains, we can just excuse it away then by having it there.
Seriously speaking, though, and this is not part of the set list, but I was thinking about this with Ben Lieber, and like, you know, you getting out of the NFL when you got out of it, Ben Lieber retiring when he retired. How old are you? 36. Okay, 36. Are you concerned that when you're in your 40s or your 50s that you may live with pain?
I'm concerned about it, yes. I think the biggest thing, you know, 5 knee surgeries, obviously 2 ACLs.
Five?
Yeah, so 2 ACLs, both, you know, obviously the ACLs done in both. You know, I think just the wear and tear, but, you know, for playing linebacker for as long as I did, no shoulders.
That's good.
My hips are really good.
Yep.
So, I mean, as of now, I think another reason, just to add to the reasons of why I retired for, you know, couldn't play, was too slow, just along those lines. The other thing is I still felt really good, and it's like, when is enough enough, and when's ready to move on, and I think the timing was good on that. So, like, right now I feel great, and I feel like, you know, hopefully another 10 years, but everybody you talk to is like, oh, when I turned 40,
really?
You know, that's the aches and pains, and that's not even just football players, that's just people in general, living, not that threw their body around and had, you know, whatever amount of tackles.
There aren't a lot of 40-year-olds getting hip replacements.
Yeah, you know, there are some, but you know, hopefully you're not on the list. But I'm not on the list. But I think I got another good 10, 15 years without pain. Hopefully, let's hope longer than that.
What do you know about the Alliance of American Football?
I don't know a lot. I know some former teammates are playing. Edmund Robinson, linebacker. He is with...
don't know.
Somebody.
Matt Asiata.
Arizona Hotshots. Arizona Hotshots. Thank you. I did. So I'm happy those guys are getting an opportunity to stay in the game, you know, make a little cash. You know, the biggest thing with that, just kind of thinking back to when, like, Brooks Bollinger and guys were in the UFL? Was that the most recent one?
I don't know.
Yes. The UFL, United Football League, was guys would play, but then guys would wait for checks for like a long time.
Oh.
So that's the concern: is there funding? Is there people coming in the stands? Is there sponsors behind it? That whole bit is like, how are those guys gonna make that money?
Yeah.
And the other thing is are the NFL? I saw you know, the NFL had something on their homepage about the AAF and like they're promoting it, and the fact that are these guys gonna have some success and all of a sudden get called into, you know, off-season training, off-season workouts, all of a sudden they're getting year contracts.
Teams are sending scouts to the games.
So if the NFL can coordinate that, I think that's excellent, and that's great for guys that maybe had an injury, or you see some of the names of guys that are playing, like, these guys are players.
I remember them.
Right?
You know, Gavin
Escobar, right? I mean, the tight end was playing for the Cowboys, and he's back in the
Trent Richardson.
AAF, yep. Trent Richardson, but man, did that guy have opportunities, right? Your first-round pick.
Plenty,
So the reality is there's guys that can play. Edmund Robinson can play football.
Yeah.
Great athlete, long, 6'4", 235, 240. I mean, the guy can play. He just needs an opportunity. So, you know, you hope they can scratch something together and get a chance.
With Grey Duck Vodka, anything new?
A lot of new stuff. Yeah, we're actually we're launching in Iowa now in March. We're getting some dates together, working with some of my actually old college teammates down there, Nate Kading, you know, former Lou Groza Award winner. He's a restaurant owner, so we're gonna do some launch stuff down there with him. You know, we're in Costco here in St. Louis Park. You can hit a golf ball there, but I can't. But from where we're sitting right now, So we're in Costco on a kind of a test run. So if you want to get some gray duck at a good price, go to Costco in St. Louis Park.
I bet it's a great price.
Good price. And
is that the only Costco?
For now, yeah. They do like a test market. So,
good
you know,
for you.
How do we do
so
there?
Only in St. Louis Park.
Yeah, only in St. Louis Park for now. And if we do well, now you get to expand and go to every Costco that you know, in the states we're in is the hope. So that's the game plan. We'll see how it goes.
I do this thing called Whiskey Weekend once a year.
I see it's coming up, right?
It is coming up. That's right.
This weekend?
Next weekend.
Okay.
And it's eight guys in a luxury cabin in central Minnesota.
Luxury.
We all bring a different bottle of whiskey that's never been there.
Love it.
And we do a blind double elimination taste test, March Madness bracket
Love
style
it.
Over the course of the weekend. And Costco does a shockingly good job of periodically bringing in brands, a little bit like Grey Duck.
Yeah.
That is stuff that you'd never think, you'd think it's only going to be Jim Beam and Jack
right,
Daniels.
The big stuff, right? Yep.
But they'll bring in periodically like a Blanton's and these smaller distillery and local distillery stuff into Costco. They do a great job of that.
Yeah, I think Johnson Brothers, our distributor, really helped us get into there and get an opportunity to be there. And
that's great.
And so far it's gone really, really well. We'd love for people to go out there and buy them out so we can get all over in all the Costcos. But Cub Foods, Total Wine, all these, we want to be in the munis, right? We want to be in the local establishments that people are going and they can order a drink. And that's kind of what we're kind of building our brand around. And funny you bring up the March Madness. That's the one big thing we're looking to do in March is to create a bracket style. So we want, if you have Grey Duck in your bar and restaurant, if you have, the place you go, you can order it. We want to make a final 64-team bracket of Grey Duck cocktails and whittle them down as the tournament goes to a final four. The plan is to have a final four viewing party at Randall's. Downtown, the weekend of the Final Four.
Wow.
And do something big. And I think the fun part for us is to get these local establishments. I don't care if you're in, we're up in War Road or you're out in Alec or you're down in Rochester.
Yeah.
You have a place that has Grey Duck, make a drink, make it unique, get in the tournament, and we're going to whittle them down. It's going to be a lot of, including fans and voters and social media and just
fun.
To get creative and have fun with it.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Final Four is going to be here in the Twin Cities. So, a lot of fun stuff going on.
So, so up to the Final Four, the basketball Final Four, I guess we should expect you in here every Friday.
If you're ready, let's do it.
Yeah,
it sounds like you need some content anyway, so you
come
might
up,
as well.
Come up with some free agency topics, send some Grey Duck.
Absolutely.
Bracketology.
So speaking
bracketology
of,
meets mixology.
It is. It's a hot mixology. It's a good take. Absolutely.
Oh, how about that?
We might steal that.
Are
That's
you
okay.
using that marketing slogan?
I think we are now.
Mixology meets bracketology.
Love it.
Stick around, all right?
Will do.
Chad Greenway in studio, Friday Football Feast, PA in charge. Nordo, cash call.
Indeed, a new chance every hour to put $1,000 in your pocket. Grand in your hand. It's the National Cash Contest. Text the word TAXI to 200-200. That's TAXI to 200-200. TAXI to 200-200. Put a grand in your hand. Text message and data rates apply.
You're listening to PA in Charge. It's a Friday football feast, 9 to noon on The Fan.
Programming on The Fan brought to you in part by Quick Trip. Listen to The Fan, Thursday, February 21st at 7:20 a.m. It's a major concert announcement. Twin Cities Summer Jam hits Canterbury Park, July 18th, 19th, and 20th. Get the artist lineup and on-sale info. Thursday on The Fan at 7:20 a.m. That's during the Power Trip morning show. Thursday, 7:20, Power Trip for that announcement. Twin Cities Summer Jam, three-day music festival where rock, pop, and country come together in our own backyard.
It is the Friday
Football Feast.
It's BA in charge, Chad Greenway in studio. After messing around a little bit, how about some of this?
Hardcore football.
Because I think it's going to happen a fair amount with Vikings football in 2019, not only with the three I would predict absolutely start on the offensive line. Pat Elflein at center. I firmly believe he'll be center. Brian O'Neill, I firmly believe he will be right tackle.
Love what he did last year.
Riley Reiff will start.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced it's going to be left tackle. It could be left tackle. It could be left guard. So I got those three in. I believe they will find their way to two, most likely in the draft, who will play those other two positions. So now with Team Stefanski, but Gary Kubiak by his side, and Kubiak with this zone blocking bent.
Yep.
My question to you.
Did we leave Remmers out of that?
Intentionally.
I can't.
This page left intentionally.
No,
blank.
I don't know what Mike's lot in life is with this team next year. When Mike is healthy.
I liked him as a guard when he was here, but his first stint. Well, he was when I was playing, he was better, I thought, as a guard than as a tackle.
When he's completely healthy, you can get to the Super Bowl with Mike as a starting offensive lineman.
We know that.
The Carolina Panthers did that.
Yes. You can also lose a Super
Bowl.
And
he got paid. Yeah. But he played better than I did.
He was on the field, but you could have blocked better than he did in that game.
I would think I have Mike in the mix. Not exactly sure what the team thinks or how it will transpire.
You know, the cost is going to be the biggest factor there.
And they can save $17 million over 3 years by cutting him.
Yeah, the value out of probably releasing him, unfortunately, would be, you know, but if you can get him for cheaper, you can renegotiate.
But here's the question.
Yep.
Given, I believe, zone blocking with the Vikings offensive line will be en vogue in 2019.
No question.
I believe it's going to be significantly en vogue. As a linebacker playing against these zone blocking schemes.
It's like Green Bay now.
What's it like?
It's tough. It is tough because especially, you know, the run is meant to be hit on the cutback. And you can see teams that do it really well. They get you flowing and they get you overflowing, and then all the linemen have to do is really just push you by, and then they hit the running back, gets their foot in the ground and gets vertical, you know, behind the old lineman, and away they go. You know, with Coach Zimmer, we did a good job of planning for that, playing ahead and playing blocks differently. We would literally change how we play schemes against certain teams. The Houston Texans, when they were rolling, you know, a few years back. It was 2012 when we had to beat them down in Houston. They were just rolling that zone scheme, and you had to play a block completely differently. Green Bay did it for a number of years.
Can you get nerdy with me on how you play a zone blocker differently?
100%. So if a O-lineman is scooping or coming up to seal you off from a run lane, typically you are trying to punch and get front side. You know, you're trying to use your hands, you're trying to use your head, you're trying to get extension of the line so you can just defeat a block the correct way you're trying to go where the ball carrier is going. Okay. So front side. So he's trying to keep you maybe to your left.
Okay.
You need to get to the right side, right? Play it front side, get over the top. There's other people behind, the defensive end, the defensive tackle, the other outside linebacker are there to help secure that. Maybe it's a safety filling in behind you. A lot of times what they're trying to do is you need to actually play behind a block, which is never good.
How do you get behind a block?
So behind a block, you would actually let them overreach you.
Mm. Okay.
And then you would punch, still play aggressively downhill. Then you would fall back. We'll call it falling back into behind the block, which is never what you want to do normally because you want to get that front side. Because what happens then is you have your defensive end, your defensive tackle, the front side, stay front side of the play, make the ball cut. And now you have your second level defenders and even your defenders that are behind the play, your defensive end and other defensive tackle playing behind that play. So then when he cuts, we're sitting there waiting.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So it sounds like it's a lot of.
It's hard to describe to somebody who's listening on the radio who without having like a whiteboard in front of you.
I'm struggling.
But if I'm a guard, I'm going to come up and try to seal you off so you can't go to your right.
Okay.
Because that's where I want on paper, that's where the run goes.
Right.
Well, when we play teams that know we want to hit the cutback, you're going to punch that guard as a linebacker with your hands, right? Not physically punch everybody out there.
I understand.
And defeat the block, but actually defeat the block and fall back.
Interesting.
To where you think the play is not going to go.
Okay.
Hold on, please.
That's why you watch tape, and that's why you do those things to know what their tendencies are.
My God.
Can you repeat the part of the stuff where you said all about the things?
That's why you just talk about football.
Well, the last
rather
part.
Rather than doing it.
They hit the area they think you're going to go, but you don't go there? What?
I didn't. Yeah, so what they're trying to get you to overrun the play so they can cut the defensive end behind the play.
Kendricks did a lot very young in his career because he was hyper.
Yeah, get over the top and overrun a play, right? And then they, boom, put their foot in the ground, the running back, and you see these cuts in the backfield behind the old lineman, and boom.
Those slow developing bits.
And then they hit and go vertical, which means towards the end zone. And now they have you're on a safety, and maybe you're on a safety that's coming in. Harry's walked down the box, and all of a sudden there's a 5-yard gap, but he's got to close, and he's 1-on-1 to make the tackle.
Yeah.
And the cutback, you know, it's an 8-yard gain every time, or it's a potential long play.
Right.
Jake, give me a thumbs up. You play football?
Yes, I do.
Can you imagine the conversation this young man's going to have with the next football coach he has about the essence of zone blocking?
Well,
unbelievable.
The zone scheme is, you know, I prefer as a linebacker.
Yeah, what do you want
to
see?
I don't want to see a zone because I don't like the inability for me to see, okay, it's a power play, which is a, you know, the guard's going to pull and they're going to kick out the defensive end and the fullback's going to lead up into the hole and try to knock the linebacker out. Like, if I know that's what's going on, the old tale is that typically old linemen won't lie to you, but running backs will. Mm. So, and quarterback, never watch the quarterback because they're just liars. Right. Yeah, you pay them too much, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why and they spin out the opposite way to make a handoff to go the different direction. It's like you can't watch them because you take a bad step and now all of a sudden you're cut off and it runs down your throat and away they go. So you watch the lineman. Well, when the lineman pulls, you know the play
is going
that direction, right? So it's an easy read for me as a linebacker because I know what I'm looking through. I'm looking through the line into the backs. I see this guy head pop, go, boom, blitz the gap, right? Fill the gap, fullback's there, take him on. Well, in a zone, it's just this whole group moving as one and the ability for that running back to just decide where he's going to go.
Right.
Now, I don't know. There's no clear path that he's going to hit the B gap, right? Yeah. Though I don't know that.
Because he doesn't know it either.
Because he's going to wait and read it, and then he's going to put his foot in the ground, cut back door, and he's gone.
God. Now, don't you think Dalvin Cook, as a very patient runner, is really well for this?
Well, the reason that they are going to go to a zone scheme is because we have Dalvin Cook. Yeah, I mean, the reality is that's what he does, and that's what he's done before.
You can't zone scheme consistently with Peterson, right?
Not he does a good job running that way.
Yeah.
I just think that... I think he's actually, I'd say Adrian's better running off the zone scheme than he would be off, you know, he never loved running behind a fullback.
Yeah.
No.
And he never loved, to me, like it's, you know, he's such a specimen that if he gets in one-on-one situations, in a situation like that, he's really hard to bring down, right?
Yeah.
But if we all know where he's going, and the fullback's leading the way, well, it's pretty obvious to see where the ball's going to go, and you get more defenders there to help you bring him down. Because you have the middle linebacker taking on the fullback, you have the outside linebacker filling the hole, you have the two interior linemen filling the gap to tighten it up.
Yeah.
So I just think a zone is much harder to defend if you have the right personnel, and that's where the old linemen come in, and the right teacher, and you got to have the right personnel of guys that can move. And the interesting name to think about is, where's Nick Easton at in his recovery and in coming back? I don't know contract situation or anything like that, but he is a guy that would play well in that scheme with how athletic he is and his ability to move in space and the things he was doing really well before he got hurt that we were all kind of starting to fall in love with.
See, but when you hear injury involving neck, then I don't speculate on the next step. I assume there is no next step. And if there is, then I'm surprised. Then I'm pleasantly surprised.
Only from being around him just four or five times in the last year, things have looked and talking to him looked like they were progressing well.
Sweet.
So I'm happy for, you know, a guy I played with and a guy who, you know, we got the trade with from Gerald Hodges from the 49ers. Remember that trade? And we got him. And when he came on, we're like, wait a second, this guy, because he was a center.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they move him out of center. Like, oh, now we have something. He was just out of position.
You look at him, he looks like he works in the video department.
Yeah, he does on the downtime, probably, because that's what he looks like. And all of a sudden, now we get him in some space, and he can move, and he's a big body, and he's super strong.
Mm.
You know, he's going to – I hope it works out for him either to be here or somewhere.
Down memory lane we go for 1 second. Adrian Peterson, this ties into Greenway and Paul Charchian. Down memory lane we go with a Skull story. It might have been Adrian's first preseason game or his first road preseason game, 2007, at the Meadowlands against the New York Jets. He's running to the right near the sideline, encountered by overmatched corner David Barrett. Now, remember Adrian trucking that corner in that preseason game? It was the first, like, there he is trucking somebody, obviously in 09. Middle of the field, William Gay.
That one will never leave my mind.
That trucking work was unbelievable. So then he does that. Okay. Next step might have been Colin Leffler's rookie year. Okay, he played at Texas, right around there. So you lose a preseason game to the Jets. Okay, everybody's buzzing about Adrian trucking David Barrett. Colin Leffler is almost inconsolable next to the buses set to go to the airport. Main man, Paul Allen, call games on the radio. What's up? Why are you so upset? I come from Texas. We're not used to losing any games. Owen, this is preseason, man. This is when you work out kinks. I know, but I'm not used to losing. He was so upset.
You remember what quarterback started for the Jets in that 07 game in the preseason?
Chad Pennington?
You got it.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yes.
And then finally, so now we get back super late from this night preseason game. I signed up to join Paul Charchian at Canterbury Park for his fantasy football training camp.
That's right.
Where they did a mock draft.
Yep.
And I had the last pick in the first round of the mock draft. I'm not exactly sure into his rookie season where Adrian Peterson was slated.
He was typically going in like the third or fourth round.
Right. So after I saw what I saw that night and seeing him all training camp, I get there in front of this crowd and I have the last pick of like, it might have been like 12 to 20. Mm-hmm. I've got some pick between 12 and 20. And, you know, of course, branded as cheerleader homer guy. There's that going into it. But then with the 12th pick, I pick Adrian Peterson.
Well done.
And the crowd just explodes with approval. But then I explained why. Because Charch, probably Ben Vickers, Jeff Haydock, Matt Harrison, explosive output. They're hitting me with the cheerleader card, and I'm like, okay, I'm telling you right now, this thing is different. Okay, we saw it last night. We've seen it all training camp, and it was different. Obviously, it was different. He was rookie of the year that
he
year.
He is different. He got 1,000 yards this year.
I know.
I couldn't believe it. I'm happy for him, but could not believe it.
And it wasn't the easiest 1,000 yards in the world. You know, they lost most, Washington lost most of their offensive line by the middle of the year.
Yep.
He had to grind.
And really, on paper, I thought it was a good spot because that's a good offensive line when they're healthy.
It is.
No question about it.
And that's what he needs.
But
he was always a guy, you know, if you give him the gap, then he's gone. And, you know, but he was never, he's not Barry Sanders. He's not going to make two guys miss.
No. No, it's got to be a one-cut go, and then obviously when he hits full steam, it's hard to catch him and bring him down.
So back to him, back to his style, Adrian's style in a zone where you think it would work. What trouble me is like the great zone runners, like Le'Veon Bell's unbelievable.
Yes, he is.
It's because he gets the handoff, he runs slowly behind this line, waiting for something to develop. He's patient.
Yep.
He's running slowly, and then when the hole opens. Bang!
I would not put Adrian in that category.
Not that way.
No, I wouldn't put him in that category either. I don't think he's a true zone. Like we're gonna set the play for the sideline and let Adrian decide when he's gonna cut.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the right scheme for him either. So I think it's a little bit of a mix. And I always thought when you did have the right setup for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could start 8 yards deep and get his foot in the ground and get a head of steam by the time he hits the gap. Is like, I mean, what are you going to do with that guy?
Right.
Right. But the problem with him is he took too many negative plays on these types of zone plays. I just don't think he ever liked running and was comfortable running behind a fullback. So that's why I say I think maybe a zone scheme would be able to work. But nothing like, what in my opinion, how Dalvin Cook is going to work in that system. I think it's going to be ideal for him.
If they can get that line together, get new personnel, get them to learn this and everything else.
We've been talking about this for...
I know. Yeah, how many times have you said that?
Yeah.
Five, six years. They got to learn, but they got to also, now they got to learn zone blocking.
Yeah, but right? I think that's something that, you know, a lot of these kids come by naturally, especially the younger kids coming out of college. It's just more of that patient approach from an offensive line because it's more run-pass option stuff now coming out of college. So they're kind of ingrained to have that mentality anyways. And some of these guys that are... They've been in that scheme at some point.
Yeah.
They've been in that scheme. Riley Reiff's been in that scheme because he did it at Iowa. So he's been in that scheme, that zone scheme. So
Iowa, third best school in the Big Ten to find offensive linemen.
We could argue about that.
Wisconsin and Ohio State.
We could argue about that.
Wisconsin,
what about numbers? Just pure numbers?
Wisconsin is OLU. Elite. It's offensive line university.
Which one do we get? Tight end then?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah,
it's real good.
Back to Dallas Clark.
George Kittle. Cal.
Yep, George Kittle.
Dallas Clark.
Yep, your guy Noah Fant coming out this year.
Chandler, Fant.
Yeah.
Hockenson. You know, we just won the Mackey again with Hockenson, who was our second best tight end on the team.
You're TEU. But Wisconsin is OLU. Nordo yesterday.
I got to look at the numbers before I completely concede that.
There are three Wisconsin offensive linemen this year because we are doing 18 players potentially for pick 18 up to our combine shows. Nordo cut loose with three Wisconsin offensive linemen yesterday that I did some work on them after the show. All three are going to be gone by pick 50.
That's okay? Crazy.
So that, I mean, it's OLU. And then he went back to when Russell Wilson was the quarterback.
I only say that's crazy because they weren't very good this year.
Right. That's what I said too. But their running game was really good, actually. Their tailback had a million yards. But He went back to the offensive line in front of Russell Wilson. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
There were four, like, from Kevin Zeitler to Havenstein, Havenstein.
Yeah, with the Rams.
With the Rams.
The Cowboy Center.
Travis Frederick.
Travis Frederick. There you go. Yep.
And there was another. There was another one in there who plays in the NFL.
And the stat that I find interesting is, I wonder how many are from Wisconsin, because a lot of them are. Yeah. From Wisconsin,
yeah,
and they just keep him there, and they just actually just breed an O-line over there in Wisconsin.
Milk fed.
Let me bring this up in closing. Kirk Cousins earlier in the week got nice on Twitter. Yeah, Kirk's been active on Twitter,
very active. I've noticed.
I know,
don't scroll down.
And I don't know if it's the marketing people doing it, if it's him. Like it's too much. He live tweeted the Super Bowl. Like every other player, whatever. Okay, cool, man. But he got really nice on Twitter. I'm feeling good about myself today. I'm in Grand Cayman, whatever. What do you want? Signed jersey, signed football, signed helmet. Go ahead and vote on it. Then the mentions got unbelievably negative.
Yeah,
with people being like, "What I want is you to give back the $84 million that you pilfered from this football squad." That's what they were saying. So my question to you. What's the proper
on his way to 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns?
Yeah.
What's the proper way for players to handle social media? Obviously, when they're playing, while they're in the game.
Well, my approach was to not have it until my last 2 years.
Right.
I just didn't have it because I had a hard time with that negativity of like, you know, what do you guys know about it? You weren't in the room. You don't know what I'm being taught. You don't know what's right or wrong or indifferent. It's just what's on paper, right? You can see me make a mistake, you know, a missed tackle, and you know that's my bad. Right, and you can just go on and on about how much I get paid and how worthless you are and how slow you are and how this and that. I honestly do not know how he does it because he's all over social media these last few weeks, and you just scroll down, you're like, oh my goodness. And, you know, shame on the fans, first of all.
I know.
For just being, and I get it that,
so
you know,
cruel.
We paid him a lot of money and brought him in, but the reality is through the first 8 to 10 games, statistically, he was just off the charts, and you would know numbers better, Charge. But,
he was
I mean, what Thielen was doing, what Diggs was doing.
But on the other side of it, not to clip on you, people, and it might be a fair argument. People for years have looked at it and said Kirk Cousins is forever statistically on the right side
of
things.
But then as a fan, why would you all of a sudden think it's going to be different, right? I mean, the ownership obviously thought it was going to be different when he came here and thought that he's going to win those big games. And we're going to, with our defense and what we have in place, that he's going to be able to go get these tight games and games with teams with running records and get those wins. Well, in the first year, he didn't do it. Right, and it's, I mean, the negativity towards our quarterback kind of sucks, right? I mean, as a Vikings fan and a lifer, it's like you'd like to see your fan base rally behind, even though you know he didn't win the game to get in the playoffs. He struggled towards the end, struggled in tight games. But the reality is, guys, he's coming back, right? We paid him a lot of money to be our quarterback. He obviously needs another opportunity. He's going to get another opportunity. Then Case Keenum, you know, is probably going to get released. Whatever's going to happen to him in Denver, and now everybody's fired up by bringing him back. It's like, you know, we got to stay the course. You got to continue to build your defense, continue to put weapons around him, and just see what happens. But, I mean, the extreme negativity is just a life hard-lived as an NFL player. But I guess when you get paid that much, people feel like it's free access.
They feel like they don't even need to be a human being anymore.
Right. Yep.
And that they can treat you and say to you anything they
just
want.
Just crazy things.
Before mixology meets bracketology.
It's coming up.
We need to let you know at the St. Louis Park Costco, you can find Grey Duck Vodka.
You got it. Grey Duck Vodka at Costco. Total Wine. All over the place. But go buy out Costco today. Why not?
Either see you whenever you want to come in. Any Friday. Charch isn't here next week if you want to come in and help. Great. If not.
Oh, we can talk about him.
It'll be a far better show without me.
Sounds perfect.
You.
You're the best.
Didn't bring anything to the table today?
Nothing.
No, he's been fantastic. Thank you. Chad Greenway in studio. Final segment. Feast next.
I'm Kirk Cousins. This is the Friday Football Feast on The Fan. You like that.
And, I love it, baby. Woo!
Ain't nothing I can say.
Hold on to your butts.
Nothing I can do.
Not much else to say.
I feel so bad.
Personal foul.
Yeah.
Personal foul.
Feel so blue.
Personal foul. Clipping.
The game is over.
PA and Charge.
For everyone concerned.
Football Feast.
Nordo, did you capture any of State Rep Pat Garofalo, Farmington? and the power trip this morning. Did you hear it? Any idea what how the sports betting conversation went?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, the vibe is for him, it's really an outreach campaign. It's kind of the first step with the legislation, of course, going down the legal route. But ultimately, you know, kind of what he was trying to impress upon the listeners this morning, the power trip is, you know, he feels optimistic about its ability to pass, mm-hmm. and that we will certainly have legalized sports betting and gambling yep. in the state of Minnesota eventually. But that's predicated upon constituents and their motivation to contact their representatives.
Okay.
You know, kind of the idea is your reps don't know how important this is to you. And typically they will try to stay away from controversial things unless the voting public is out there saying, hey, you represent me. This is important to me. Get after it.
Okay.
And so it's on the people to really pump it up.
One of the things I've learned in the past several years being involved in trying to get fantasy sports formally legalized in Minnesota.
That it's hell?
It's legal. You know, it's not illegal. And yeah. so, you know, fantasy sports works here and you can play and you're not a criminal. And, you know, my company offers services to all 50 states where it's legal and it's legal almost everywhere. But we'd like to get it formally legalized.
Yeah.
So we've been working through this process. Stunned to learn just how important it is for you to reach out to your representatives, your senator, your state rep. That is the single biggest thing that moves the needle on their opinions on things that they don't necessarily know a lot about.
Yeah.
Like in our case, you know, fantasy sports with, you know, all these gray hairs at the Capitol, they didn't have any idea. But what they did know is, I got a lot of emails on this. I got a lot of people care about this, apparently. And they understand they have blind spots where they don't know what the people want. And this is going to be one of them again for a lot of the people.
Yeah.
They don't know that we want legalized sports betting.
Do you think those not in the know look at sports betting akin to legalizing marijuana, prostitution, stuff like that? I mean, do
I wouldn't
people
necessarily I group those.
I'm asking either. The question. Do people, when they go down the road of telling us, you know, what's going to ruin us?
Legislating morality, essentially.
Yeah, I'm not going to legalize sports gambling because if I do, then 50 million people by the year, whatever, will be living on the street.
I would separate betting from marijuana.
What about prostitution?
Because I believe that there are a fair amount of people out there who typically would say, I do believe that people should be able to put a fair wager in their hard-earned cash on a sporting event.
Yeah.
However, I believe that marijuana is a detriment to the general public's health, and that is a health and safety concern. Therefore, so I think each individual topic, maybe some, you know, those more likely opposed to, you know, certain sort of recreational activities.
Yeah,
there are individuals, religion or otherwise, that may be more prone to being against legalized prostitution, for instance.
Those are
but
such,
I think each are different.
Those are such deeply rooted conversations because it's my belief, having done a lot of things over mm-hmm. the years, that alcohol is so markedly worse for your body and for the crimes that are committed compared to marijuana. I don't even think it's close.
I agree with you 100%.
Yet that never would be an argument. You know what I mean?
Well, you could never, if you were to introduce.
You have Whiskey Weekend, not Humboldt County Weed Weekend.
No, we don't do Weed Weekend.
Well, maybe in 2021, Charge.
I doubt it, but you never know.
Oh, okay.
Who's to say? If you were to try to get alcohol into the marketplace now from scratch.
Oh, yeah.
You just invented distilleries in your.
See, I think it's awful.
If you tried to get into the marketplace, you couldn't do it right now.
Got it.
But people like to do it, mm-hmm. right? And they're going to do it anyway, as we proved in Prohibition. It's the same thing with sports gambling. People are doing it right now, and they're doing it in an unsafe, unregulated, and untaxed way.
Same with marijuana, similar
to marijuana. Although, frankly, it gets safer in many ways. You know, people are sending their cash to some offshore book operation or dealing with some shady bookie. When you know, those aren't safe ways to do sports betting, and people are doing sports betting right now. We should have it in a legal, safe, regulated way so that the people who want to do it can do it in a way that they know is going to be run properly.
I know you're not here next week, so enjoy Humboldt County Weed Weekend, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Deal.
Paul Charchi and Paul Allen, that's the Friday Football Feast. Jacob was the co-producer, along with David Sinekin, and it's time for the real producer, Nordo, to put a wrap on the show.
Thanks to the Paddy Wagon, sponsoring the 9 to noon show, Wraps. Paddy Wagon, 61st and Nicollet.
Greenway in studio, always great, full of charm. Traded teats for cleats, but now he's back on the farm. Corn from the ground to the combine, it's full throttle, ending up in your Grey Duck vodka bottle. Delicious, like a potential wild melodrama. Is the head coach wearing lame duck pajamas? He predicts the playoffs, the GM wants to sell off. Stay clear, Kaprasov, here comes a lit Molotov. But little too heavy for a Friday, though. Let's keep it to the fruit that hangs low, like Charge's obsession with weird toys and ball gags, and PA's affinity for nudie mags and chin drags.
Hey, have a seat for a second.
PA and Charge. Football Feast. I know, right? Easy credit
rip-offs. Just listen. Just listen.
There are many, many positives I can get out of this game. Good time.
Managing the mood swings. We got 'em. Good time. Son of a...
If it's good news or money, leave a message.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.